Ghislaine Maxwell serving a 20-year sentence for her role in Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking crimes was interviewed by the Department of Justice under the Trump administration, sparking renewed interest in Epstein's network. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, a former Trump lawyer, met Maxwell in Tallahassee, Florida on July 24th through the 25th to probe potential information about others involved in Epstein's crimes.
I think Ghislaine did a wonderful job. She literally answered every question. She didn't say, "You know what, don't ask me that. I'm not going to talk about this person." She was asked maybe about 100 different people. She answered questions about everybody, and she didn't hold anything back.
But her lawyer, David Oscar Marcus, declined to disclose specifics. The speculation fueled by this interview and the lingering question of a pardon concerning Maxwell revolve around Epstein's alleged ties to foreign entities, not just politicians and celebrities, as the plot thickens.
But a lot of people have asked about pardon. This is just not a time to be talking about pardons. Todd will come back with whatever he's got. You're making a very big thing over something that's not a big thing. You should be talking about, if you're going to talk about that, talk about Clinton, talk about the former president of Harvard, talk about all of his friends, talk about the hedge fund guys that were with him all the time. Don't talk about Trump.
The Democrats pushing Trump on this and trying to connect him to all of this has massively backfired. And I've been saying for 20-plus days since this all broke, Trump needs to lean into this and order everything released, and that's all starting. Democrat judges all over the country, Florida, New York, are trying to block the release of the Epstein files now.
Evidence suggesting Epstein's connections to Mossad and Russian entities continues to burrow down the rabbit hole.
So $21 trillion disappeared from DOD and HUD over the period that Epstein was operating. He went to the White House, his first time in the White House. Rubin, who became Secretary of Treasury, took him, I think, in 1994. And then Rubin goes to Treasury, money starts disappearing, and then, you know, Epstein is ballooning fantastic amounts of money. So I think Epstein was laundering the money that was coming out of DOD. And if you look at his relationships with Mossad and Israeli intelligence, when Mossad is taking over DOD and the money's going missing, and we know the cybersecurity and IT in the Israeli sort of constellation was very active, you know, in government at that time. So if you let the files out, people are going to connect the dots between Epstein, Mossad, the growing power of Israel, AIPAC, and then where did their pension fund money go?
Of course, Ghislaine's father, Robert Maxwell, was alleged in books like Robert Maxwell's Israel Super Spy to have worked with Mossad. Similarly, Epstein's ties to Russian figures such as Sergei Belyakov, a former Russian official who assisted Epstein with a Russian model and visa issues, and Epstein's processing of millions through Russian banks suggest possible Russian intelligence interest. Ghislaine Maxwell's own activities also add to the scrutiny, particularly her Terramar Project, a nonprofit founded in 2012 to promote ocean conservation, which likely functioned as a shell company. The New York Post reveals that Terramar, which shut down after Epstein's 2019 arrest, had minimal financial transparency and was linked to Epstein's funding of his illicit network, raising questions about its true purpose. The Terramar Project raised approximately $197,000 in public donations over its operational years from 2012 to 2019. Maxwell loaned significant sums to keep the organization afloat, with tax filings indicating that by 2017, the nonprofit owed her $539,000. And by the end of 2018, this debt had increased to $561,000. The Terramar Project was endorsed by the Clinton Global Initiative in 2013, but direct financial contributions are not clearly documented. Ghislaine's tech billionaire boyfriend at the time, Ted Waite, once donated $10 million to the William J. Clinton Foundation and was essential in getting the Terramar Project funded. There are plenty more rocks that have yet to be turned over as the Epstein saga stumbles onward. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
How do I explain to people that my tongue is blue? because I love this stuff, methylene blue. I'm able to work like 18-hour days sometimes. This stuff is like rocket fuel.
I didn't know you were going to plug this. You even ordered it yourself, I later learned. What is the effect of our medical-grade methylene blue been on you, Roger?
Incredible, both physical and mental energy and focus. I mean, it really is like rocket fuel. Oh, you still like Brain Force? Back when I did the show with Owen Schroyer, the original, the real War Room, I was a big aficionado of Brain Force and Brain Force Force Plus. This is even a greater product. I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Well, I've not had any since Friday. I only take it every couple of days. So I'm going to take my dose of methylene blue, my Topo Chico. It is amazing. And people ask me, what does it do? It cleans out your mitochondria. It skips the oxidization process of the cell. It's like iodine at the next level. It is such a game changer. Roger Stone, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. God bless you.
It's Thursday, July 31st, in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this scene. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Thursday morning, tail end of July 2025. We got a lot to talk about today. And I know we always do. So everything's just as crazy as ever, I guess. I guess you could say we got just a lot of political news to get into, a lot of bizarre geopolitical news to get into. And I also want to get at least a little bit into the topics that were the topic of debate or conversation yesterday with Nick Fuentes and Alex Jones. They had the, you know, long anticipated debate. It turned out to be more of a conversation, less of a debate. And we did a breakdown of it with Lebanon John and Rex Jones on Moonbase Live yesterday as well, where our coverage was actually more of a debate than the Nick and Alex conversation was. I thought that was pretty interesting. Rex was supposed to be in here at 10 today, but he unfortunately had an emergency come up, so he's not going to be able to make it. So that's bad news. But the good news is that we'll be able to take your calls and lots of them today. So stay tuned for that. We can go now to a clip, and this is probably the defining clip of the conversation between Nick and Alex yesterday, where basically the question is, what's going on with Trump and what do we do about this? Because we probably won't survive another Joe Biden-style presidency as a nation, possibly as individuals. It's not unlikely that should Trump continue on the path that he's on, continue to lose support, especially amongst the youth, then we become a socialist nation. And that's the end of that, folks. There's no America to our Soviet Union. You understand? If we fall, that's it. That's all. It's over. Clip number 12. Here's Nick Fuentes and Alex Jones. Alex saying that Nick was right to predict a lot of the things Trump has done. And that fact alone makes Alex Jones sick to his stomach. Let's watch.
I said that before you came on. I said, listen, I have guests on that are consistently right. You can disagree with overall your views or whatever, but you've been dead on. So my North Star is, who's the most accurate? That's what I want. So you did predict all this, which makes me physically ill. So what? Look at the crystal ball, Nick Fuentes. What is going to happen, and then what do we do?
It's hard to say what is going to happen next because, you know, I was going to say we are in a way stuck. We are stuck with Trump for the next 4 years. And when I say stuck, I mean, whether you think it's good or bad, he's the president and he's in this incontestable position. That was sort of the aspect of it that was very concerning to me, which is that if you have Kamala Harris, she has no legitimacy. So a lot of people like to think, well, if Kamala won, what would that have looked like? Obviously, it would not have been as good. The economy wouldn't be as good. The border wouldn't have been as good. And that's obvious. But what was less concerning to me about Kamala against all of that is that she was a lot less stable. And not by that, I don't mean mentally. I mean that she had no legitimacy as a ruler. because she didn't win the Democrat primary fair and square and never did. She didn't, nobody would believe she won the general election. If she won, no one would accept that that was a fair and square deal. And so the regime would have been a lot less stable and would have had a lot less leeway. What I fear with Trump is that he has this cult-like status within the GOP. And when you look at the approval ratings over the past month, he has been declining with independents. He's hit a low with Democrats, as always. But his approval with Republicans has been remarkably stable. It's been stabilized at just under 90% approval, even in spite of everything, in spite of bombing Iran, in spite of floating the amnesty deal, in spite of the Epstein files. And so you say to yourself, where do we go from here? What do we do next? We're in this sort of intractable position where there's nothing we can do because he's there and no one can challenge him. He steamrolled Congress to get the BBB. He steamrolled many of the people in the primary throughout this whole process. And so you say, if Trump is failing us, if he's failing as a guy, and I agree with you, there's some sympathy with it. You don't say it to be mean. You don't say it even necessarily to be critical, but just descriptively, this is an old man. He has been fighting for a long time. He is tired. And you can see that he can't handle it. You can see that it is a crack up, that he cannot handle these questions. And you watch these press conferences, these interviews, it's extraordinary the way he keeps digging, the way he gets asked about it and puts his foot in his mouth with this sort of, oh, well, we need to just stop thinking about that and it's a Democrat hoax. And you say, how is it even possible that he's fumbling this hard? So much so that people are saying maybe it's calculated because it is not possible to mess it up this bad. He's failing. He's cracking up.
Oh, yeah. I love the futard saying, oh, he's going to make Democrats release the file. He's in control of it, dumbasses.
Exactly. He appointed the attorney general. It's under his purview. He could release it if he wants to. Pam Bondi could do it. Trump could tell her to do it.
So that's just a bit of a taste of the frustration I think a lot of us are feeling. And it's just, you know, we're just in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. And it's what it sort of almost contributes to the idea that, you know, Trump is being set up or he's being manipulated behind the scenes or he's in on it, in that globalists always set up the lose-lose situation, right? It's one of the things we always talk about when it comes to false flags. The only thing false about them are the flags. There's still an attack. You still have to deal with whatever they've done. It's the beauty of the Hegelian dialectic is like, they really do create a virus in a lab and release it into the public. They really did that. They really infected people with an actual virus. You have to do something, but you have to deal with it. You can't just go, this is a trick. We're going to ignore what they say. Now, it doesn't mean you have to go with their solution, but often the solution they propose is like the obvious one or the necessary one for whatever attack they've carried out. And so that's sort of where we're at with Trump, where it's like, hey, we needed Trump to get in because we needed a disruptive figure. We needed a break from normalcy. We needed somebody to come in, swing a giant hammer and shatter the two-party system, break that gridlock and actually work for the American people. We did that. We got Trump. Now all of our eggs are in that basket. And it's like, so we got to keep supporting him. And even when he seems to be going off the rails, it's like, what is the other option? You know, I got sympathy for Trump. It is bizarre just being in a situation where it seems like nobody knows what's going on. And that's sort of my takeaway. And maybe Trump does, but that's not the signals I'm getting from Trump. That's not what I'm reading into. When I look at, you know, what he says and the way he's handling this situation, I don't see somebody in control and, you know, manipulating everything as a 5D chess master. I see somebody making a series of completely unforced errors with a whole variety of unintended consequences. Also, I think that the elephant in the room here, the big piece of the conversation I don't see anybody talking about. Let me put it this way. Yeah, Nick and Alex, and they're sort of freaking out about the future of MAGA. And it's like, okay, is this thing actually going to be effective? Are we actually going to get done what needs to get done? I thought Nick put it very well to quote everybody knows, but to apply it to this, I think is accurate. It's, you know, if you take a shot at the king, you better not miss. The king in our situation is this globalist leftist, you know, societal control paradigm, this entire establishment. So everybody's talking about this divide on the right. The left is just completely insane and collapsed. The Democrats just have absolutely nothing. Cory Booker is like screaming and crying and stomping his feet over God only knows what. Like, I genuinely don't even know what they're freaking out about these days. They are still freaking out, I guess, because Colbert was fired or something. You know, who knows? Okay, so you got the right MAGA coalition. Not sure where the future leads. Are we just being folded back into the system? Is it going to be Trump goes away and it's Marco Rubio and J.D. Vance under Peter Thiel? Are we just going to be, you know, the Palantir AI with their puppets in charge? Because that would be a devastating end to this unique opportunity to wrestle our system back from the globalist. Or will we just go into socialism because Zoran Mamdani and, you know, AOC get to play up the, you know, Israel, anti-Israel stuff. The elephant in the room, I think it's weird that nobody's talking about, is the fact that for the first time, maybe ever, in a number of major issues that are the topic of headlines every day, newspapers, for the first time ever, the left and the right want the same things on all of it. There's this weird thing where the left is demanding a release of the Epstein list. MAGA's demanding the release of the Epstein list. And yet we're still at each other's throats. And nobody is talking about unity at all. Like, it's just never been an option. I mean, isn't that kind of weird? Doesn't this seem like a crazy opportunity right now where the left wants the Epstein list released and the right wants the Epstein list released? Israel doesn't want the Epstein list released. The far left progressives, or just most Democrats in total at this point, think Israel is genocidal and wants America to stop supporting their genocidal activities. Well, guess what the number one issue amongst disaffected Trump supporters is? We want the same thing. So it's like right now, you got the left and the right in tatters. While there's this massive shared portion of the Venn diagram where we all just want the same thing. Now, it's almost ironic because we have this amazing opportunity where we could come together left and right and say, hey, you might want universal basic income. I want to keep my guns. We disagree on these things, but can't we first just go, let's extricate ourselves from this parasitical death trap of an alliance with Israel? Can we just come together? And so, you know, to me, it's like, I was talking about this on Moonbase Live yesterday, and it was like, can't we just, like, don't we all agree just to put America first? Can't we just have an America first party? Go, right. No, it'll never work. It'll never work because the left won't do that for some reason. They would never agree to, you know, buck the idea of the global community and globalism ideology.
They can't even decide what it means to be American.
Yeah, they don't even know what it means to be an American.
And that's why, you know, to people who are on the left, right, an America First party sounds offensive, right? Because they know that there's a fundamental disagreement as what it means to be an American.
Which is why, you know, it makes their position on Israel just completely hypocritical and asinine when you have people like Ilhan Omar, like, Israel controls our country. And then she's giving speeches to her. She's like, I will benefit Somalia as my position as a congresswoman. Like, all right, you don't have a principled opposition to what's going on. You just don't like that it's you. You don't like that's not you in control of America as a foreigner for the benefit of your particular ethnic group. You're just mad it's another ethnic group and another foreign power that's taking advantage of us to this degree. So, you know, I guess it's, we just have these intractable differences with the left who have gone just completely off the rails and insane by every possible metric and in every possible way to measure, you know, political sentiment. The left has gone way, way farther left than the right has gone right. And I guess that is making it impossible for us to actually just have sensible positions, because after all, everything I believe when it comes to Israel and when it comes to America, it's all, the premise is all based on nationalism. As a nationalist, I think America should run, Americans should run America, and we shouldn't be beholden to a foreign state. That's shameful and ridiculous. And I support the Palestinians because I believe they have a right to their homeland and are a nation. Even if not officially, they clearly are a united people with shared blood and ancestry on a particular plot of land. They're a nation. They're a nation. So as nationalists, I believe they have a right not to be eradicated in their own homeland. And so to me, I just, it's easy to have a consistent principled belief across all these topics and come to, you know, arrive always on the side of the natives and of the, you know, populace of the nations that are concerned, not the elites trying to manipulate them. But for them, it's just all completely arbitrary. And yeah, they're against Israel's control, but not really. It's just, they'd be perfectly in favor if Somalia had the same level of control Israel has. They don't actually care about America. They just are mad that they're not the ones exploiting us to the maximum degree. So anyway, I think that's sort of the missing aspect of this that I really haven't heard anybody talk about. Everybody's talking about what the right's going to do, how we're going to weather this storm, or how we're going to, you know, continue the populist movement after Trump is gone. But it's like, do we not have just this amazing opportunity right now for a little bit of cross-party solidarity as Americans against the constant and, you know, unsustainable exploitation by a variety of foreign and, I don't even know how to put it, internal traitors? Anyway, we got so many videos to get to and so many stories to get to. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Thursday, the 31st of July, 2025. Trump says Canada's Palestine statehood stance may hurt trade deal. Now, just what we were just talking about. Canada revealed its intention to officially recognize the Palestinian state during the United Nations General Assembly scheduled for September 2025. This decision follows France and Britain's similar announcements and is driven by the erosion of peace prospects and Israeli settlement expansion and Gaza's humanitarian crisis. Canada's recognition is contingent upon Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas committing to reforms organizing elections in 2026 that do not include Hamas participants, and ensuring the Palestinian state is demilitarized. In response to this, Donald Trump warned in a Truth Social post that Canada's support for Palestine will, quote, make a trade deal with the U.S. very hard following ongoing tariff threats. It was funny. Somebody said, you know, at least, you know, Trump is, say what you want about him, he's the most honest president America's ever had. He just comes out and says it. He just comes out and says it. And it's just infuriating. I mean, this is just the classic issue. Here we have a negotiation with Canada. We got a lot of pressure, leverage. We got a lot of impetus to get concessions. And what do we do with that? We use it for Israel. We get all sorts of concessions. We can get all sorts of good things for America. But for Trump, it's about Israel and Palestine. We'll use our power and our influence and our leverage and our country's economic strength as a bargaining chip for the benefit of Israel and Israel alone. And it's infuriating. Again, it's like, at least he's honest. Like, you got that. We got that going for us. But what he's honest about is the fact that the American government are just we're just entirely slaves to Israel, and our interests are always subsumed, always secondary to the interests of this foreign power. Thanks, Trump. Thank you. Again, it's just weird how out in the open it is now. It's just very weird. Meanwhile, Microsoft market cap tops $4 trillion after hours on earnings bet. Microsoft shares jumped in extended trading on Wednesday, pushing the company's market cap past $4 trillion. The software giant reported better than expected quarterly results and said Azure's annual revenue topped $75 billion. NVIDIA became the first company to reach the $4 trillion mark earlier this month. The $4 trillion club has a second member, at least based on after-hour tradings. And this, I have to think, has to do with the rise of AI and the ability that these big tech companies are going to have to rapidly replace a lot of their workers with robots and pocket the cash that they save us, because why would anything ever get better when you can just make a very small number of people crap ton of money? Meanwhile, Trump administration announces new private health tracking system with big tech's help. Oh, good. Thanks, Trump. The Trump administration announced it's launching a new program that will allow Americans to share personal health data and medical records across health systems and apps run by private tech companies, promising that it will make it easier to access health records and monitor wellness. For who, though? That's my question. Okay, it'll make it easier to access health records and monitor wellness. For the government to track our records and monitor us? Is that what you're saying? It's actually incredibly easy for me to access my health records. I can do it in an instant. It's not hard at all. Call the hospital. Say, if I need my records, they say, here you go, sir. So it's not easier for me to keep track of my health records. It's not easier for me to monitor myself. Basically, what you're saying is all of our health records will be fed into the unified government-wide Palantir AI database for, you know, incorporation into the global digital data set, and that'll be used to determine whether you get food or not with the implementation of the BEAST system. And that's really what we're going to be talking about today, because it is in no way a coincidence. And just on this story, it's just another thing where it's like Trump doing something where it's just completely in line with the World Economic Forum, completely at odds with everything that we elected him to do, you know, completely in line with the well-established pattern of Palantir, these AI companies systematically and incrementally absorbing every, you know, data source available to them for incorporation into this unified monolithic set. And it's bad and it's wrong. And again, I can only assume that this is, I don't know, for the benefit of Israel somehow, I guess, considering that everything Trump does has that in common. We'll get into it more, but especially in the last 24 hours, so many countries have announced they're following the UK's lead in adopting the Online Safety Act's restrictions on information. Big tech companies are voluntarily enforcing age verification on their own sites. You've got all these reports about military activity by NATO on the border of Russia. You got Russia warning Iran that an attack by Israel and U.S. is imminent on that country. It seems like we're rushing towards World War III still, and could be happening within a week, while simultaneously every government is frantically trying to pass censorship laws or surveillance laws or monitoring laws for putting black boxes in your cars to monitor you 24/7. Something really big is about to happen, I think.
All the guests, dozens of them that have taken it, within 45 minutes to an hour, have varying degrees from extreme energy and feel really great, fog lifting, to just over the top crying. It feels so good. Cleans out the cells, just does incredible things. RFK Jr. loves it. We've got the strongest old wrestling blue, but he's going on Owen in about 30 minutes. My show just ended and I forgot to do this. Don't forget when he's on Owen to tell us what he felt. And if he doesn't feel it, we'll put that out. So Stuart, go ahead and take a half dropper or so. That's about a half dose. And then go ahead and shut that down. And then we're going to find out what happens to you. We'll see. Most people initially about 30 minutes start speaking after a couple hours. But just tell people what you think. And if you don't feel it, we're going to tell everybody.
20 minutes later.
I can feel a definite, like, an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now? Now that you have your energy spike.
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely, I feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, cause I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was.
Well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each and I'm going to go and do a longer term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
Several weeks later.
You just saw an ad for Methylene Blue. You were here a few weeks ago, and I do this with every guest, more than 50 of them now. Every person has had clarity, energy, a fog lift is the most common. But what's really good is the long-term effects for your stamina, your energy, your libido, your how hard you can work out. It's amazing. So I had forgotten when he was coming in, we gave him a bottle because he loved it.
Almost gone.
I had forgotten to ask you if you listened and did it long-term. So just briefly, tell people the short-term effect, and then now, a few weeks later, the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, like I do some Methylene Blue about a half hour before, and it just gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
Well, give me some. How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Something like that. You give me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support, theaustriansword.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, now 4 or 5 months ago, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it. I go, I don't know. I was like lifting way more, going way harder. And then I got really exhausted after about a week because the same thing happened to Rob Dew, who's a great long distance, bike rider. So he's quite the athlete. He said he was biking so hard up hills and stuff that he actually had to pull over because, his heart was going crazy. I mean, this stuff's wild.
Yeah, it's good. I like it better than doing like a 5 hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
See that? No crash.
Right.
It's not a stimulant. It just skips the oxidization process somehow.
So I've been using it while I'm out there doing search and rescue. Almost out.
You're saying you love it for working out. Has it gotten better over time, or what long-term thing have you felt, or if nothing?
Well, I think it just the main thing is it gives me a better workout, and that has good results over time. Yeah, for sure.
That's what I found without even knowing.
Yeah.
And then O'Keefe's like, oh, it made my vision better, and Rob Dew goes, we have a bunch of callers already saying that. Did you see these studies about it, like curing glaucoma? And I'm not going to say, we're not selling it as a drug. I'm not saying it's going to do that. I'm like, God, this stuff's crazy. No, they don't want you to know about it. It's like ivermectin.
Right, exactly. Old school stuff.
But you can't take it if you're on SSRIs. And folks, it's so strong. Talk to your doctor first because it's not a game. Ours is really strong. If you'll just try it, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. We'll be right back with Stuart Rhodes.
Listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I really do think something big is coming down the pipe. And it's unfortunate because it seems like this is we're barreling towards the exact situation that the election of Donald Trump was supposed to prevent. Supposed to have peace in Ukraine. Instead, we are now 9 days out from a deadline that Trump set for giving Ukraine missiles capable of, bombing Moscow to smithereens. And as Mike Adams at Health Ranger pointed out on X yesterday, remember it was the deadline with Iran that foretold that conflict. We gave Iran a 60-day deadline before, Israel unleashed on them. Trump says 10-day deadline for Russia to broker ceasefire in Ukraine starts Tuesday. So, as Mike Adams was pointing out, what Trump likes to do is set a deadline and then undercut it. Right, to keep his enemies off balance. You have 10 days, and then he launches an attack in 9. That's certainly possible. People have been reporting spy planes flying up and down the Russian border with NATO, with Europe, multiple times a day for the last couple of days. Spy planes capable of scanning huge swaths of the area. So it looks like NATO is possibly preparing some sort of offensive against Russia beyond just what Ukraine has been doing. Russia warned Iran yesterday morning that an attack by Israel and America was imminent there. Of course, it's been quiet for a little while, but that's what makes me suspicious is, after all, they didn't achieve their objectives with Iran. It still exists under the same leadership as before. So an attack is coming at some point. I mean, they're going to launch that again, no matter what. Like, you can bet on it, just a matter of when. It looks like that may be happening sometime soon. At the same time, you have basically every Western country in the world adopting this Online Safety Act protocol, including Australia, you know, lots of countries in Europe that already have massive restrictions are frantically implementing even greater control. Big tech is going along with this and voluntarily, you know, forcing their users to provide a digital ID or, you know, otherwise verify their age. And a whole bunch of other crap coming as well, all at exactly the same time, all almost seemingly within the last like 24 hours or so. All of these things are announced as not just, you know, happening eventually, but almost immediately happening. Yeah, there have been Russian spy planes detected off the Japanese coast. There's also been, there was a Chinese ship that was deep within American territorial waters a few days ago. I mean, clearly, the fault lines that have been established for World War III for the last decade or so haven't moved very much. I guess Syria at this point is the only nation that has flipped sides so far, but it's still basically, you know, the Iran, China, Russia bloc versus America, Israel, NATO, India. We were talking yesterday on Moonbase Live that, you know, the next step, according to some pretty accurate prophecies for some Orthodox saints, Elder Paisios made all these like incredible predictions about World War III that seemed to be coming true, and he made these 100 years ago. But according to that, the next step will be that President of Turkey, Erdogan, is replaced with a Western puppet. So right now, Erdogan is playing the classic Turkish role of straddling both sides, kind of being a part of NATO, but also kind of being friends with Russia, kind of being on the side of Israel, also kind of being a Muslim country, you know, in alliance with the other Muslim countries. It just sort of plays both sides constantly. And Erdogan has been a master of this. And if he's replaced by a Western puppet, that would be a major change in the geopolitical chessboard, especially when it comes to Russia's interests. And having a Turkish leader that was anti-Russian would be a recipe for disaster. So it seems like we're barreling again, still, ever, towards World War III with no sign of it slowing down. A massive disappointment. I think I can speak for most Trump supporters when I say we voted for him to end the Ukraine war. We voted for him to not go to war with Iran. We voted for him to stop all of this. And instead, it seems like he's progressing with everything he's got, and that's very disappointing. I have trouble blaming him entirely because obviously he's, you know, up against this massive global conspiracy, but he is still the champion we elected to get this done, and he's not getting it done. So it's very upsetting. And honestly, it's like, it's just the brazenness and the scope with which these countries are just eradicating free speech. It's completely insane. I mean, listen to this. All new UK cars could have breathalyzers and black box style recorders under labor plans to align with the EU. New cars sold in Britain could follow European laws and be fitted with black box style recorders and new equipment that enables breathalyzer installations amid claims the move is a political ploy by labor to reset its post-Brexit relationship with the EU. Keir Starmer's government argues that differences in car manufacturing between Britain and Europe will lead to higher costs being passed down to the customer. But critics argue that such a move could show a desire by labor to closely align Britain to rules and regulations implemented by Brussels. Okay. All right. I just feel like it's, I guess we just have to like do this over and over. When they're saying that they want to fit your car with black box recorders, in other words, they want to have a microphone in your automobile that constantly records you, sends the data to an offsite server. They're not doing that to save you money. Okay, they literally just made the argument that, gee, well, if the UK has different standards than European cars, that's going to cost money, and we're trying to get the savings passed down to the consumers here. Okay, please, for the love of God, tell me you don't believe that they're putting recording devices in every car, mandating constant surveillance of your every move because they want to save you money. I mean, it's just absurd. These excuses they come up with, it's very pathetic. It's about getting our cars in line with the EU because we just want to save you money. We just love you so much that we're going to force you to put a black box in your car so we can listen to you all the time forever. You know, to save you money. Okay, come on. Come on, you guys. Lord Hindi, Minister of State for the Department for Transport, stated earlier this week in Parliament that the government takes explicit presumption in favor of alignment in regards with how cars are manufactured. He added that government would be considering options for requiring the fitment of these safety technologies mandated by the EU's general safety regulations and would discuss these with individual manufacturers, the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders, and the National Franchise Dealership Association. New British cars could follow European laws and be fitted with black box style recorders and equipped to facilitate the installation of breathalyzers amid claims labor wants to reset its post-Brexit relationship with the EU. That's about safety. That's about safety. No, look, we have to censor the internet for safety. And we have to monitor you in your car for safety. And just everything we do, we'll claim it's for safety. And then if you question it, it's because you want people to die. And that's just tragic and abominable. And how dare you? How dare you want us all to die? And it really is to a cartoonish degree at this point, where they implement the Online Safety Act. I should have grabbed the video. And sometimes I see these videos and I'm just like, I don't know. It's like too much. It's the technology officer of the UK just saying outright, if you're against the Online Safety Act, it's because you want children to get hurt. Again, so the frustration that this works, that people fall for this. Well, I don't want children to get hurt. They're literally just censoring political material. They're just censoring the consequences of their action. It's gone so far, at this point, a UK member of parliament published the official court proceeding transcripts of the Rotherham grooming gang, and it was censored by the Online Safety Act. Actual legal court records not allowed to be read by citizens of the UK on X or any other internet platform because it supposedly violates the Online Safety Act. The Online Safety Act that they tell you, you are responsible for children being abused if you're against it. They use that to censor the court proceedings about the massive rape gangs that have embroiled the UK for decades. So I don't know how we got to this level of stupidity of the wider public that they allow this to go on and allow this to happen. And there aren't just massive protests all over the UK immediately sustained until this gets repealed, but nothing of the sort. People are going along with this. We got to protect the kids. Can't let children have access to pornography. Like, I, as far as I can tell, that hasn't even happened. It's just only been used exclusively to silence political dissent. Just could not be more obvious. Could not be more obvious. And of course, it's happening in America as well. They've got this new bill. What's the I can't remember what the American version is called, but it basically copies the Online Safety Act, only for America. And again, we just thank God that we have the First Amendment, but that's no guarantee. And right now, the First Amendment is under direct, sustained attack from a variety of different organizations. Kids Online Safety Act. Yeah, it's for online safety for kids. This is a meme from 2001, right? This is a meme from like 2003, the classic cartoon of Uncle Sam buying internet censorship. And the guy behind the counter says, how would you like this gift wrapped? Children's safety or national security? Right? How would you like your censorship presented? Would you like to say you're protecting children, or would you like to say it's national security? Because neither one's accurate, but either one will do. And now it's unquestionable. There's a third option, of course, anti-Semitism. How would you like your censorship wrapped, sir? National security, protecting children, or fighting hate and defeating anti-Semites? AIPAC-funded reps seek crackdown on anti-Semitism with bill to censor social media. A bipartisan pair of AIPAC-funded congressmen have introduced a new Anti-Defamation League-backed bill to censor social media sites as a way to crack down on anti-Semitism. Reps Josh Gottheimer and Don Bacon, both of whom have the American public Israeli Public Affairs Committee as their top donor, on Wednesday introduced the Stop Hate Act. The bill will force social media companies to pay fines up to $5 million a day for failing to comply with their censorship and spying demands. And the spying demands are, you know, possibly more dangerous even than the censorship ones. They already have dedicated offices in Facebook, you know, in X, now in TikTok. Again, using the power of America, you know, weaponizing it for the benefit of Jews and Jews alone. Where the American government has TikTok hanging over a barrel, says, you want reprieve? You want to continue to operate? Create this office of anti-Semitism monitoring. Give a position to our, you know, dedicated Jewish supremacist trained IDF operative to censor all material. And we've been hearing from insiders at TikTok that the creation of this office is coming along with a gigantic purge, and they're already implementing, you know, the AI programs to go through all the material on TikTok and ban everybody who's posted pro-Palestinian or anti-Israeli content in the recent past. So we have a foreign country using our government to protect itself and to fine big tech $5 million a day for daring to question the genocidal activity of this rogue nation. Representative Gottheimer and Don Bacon announced legislation on Wednesday designed to counter Jew hatred on social media and use those and the use of those platforms by terrorist groups. Backed by the ADL, the bill would impose a daily $5 million fine on social media companies that fail to report publicly on violations on their terms of service and how they're addressing these violations. There's no reason why anyone, especially terrorists or anyone online, should access social media platforms to promote radical hate-filled violence, he said. Social media companies can no longer hide these crimes taking place on their platforms, especially when they pose a threat to America's national security. Oh, so it's all of them. So it's kids, it's national security, it's anti-Semitism. And in reality, all of it is just in service of Israel's Greater Israel Project. And they want to be able to commit genocide or, you know, ethnically cleanse an area without the annoyance of having people online complain about it. And if you complain about it or criticize it, they'll call you anti-Semitic and fine you $5 million a day. Now, this is all very confusing, I think, because, you know, they reference things like terrorism, terrorists using these platforms, while we simultaneously have American officials claiming that the attacks from West Bank settlers, the Israeli settlers burning villages, attacking Christian villages, bombing 2,000-year-old churches in the West Bank, Bethlehem, and elsewhere in Palestine, are terrorists. They're actually terrorists. The government official has called these attacks terrorism. And of course, that's what they are. It's non-state actors committing violence against civilians for the purpose of, you know, political manipulation. It's just terrorism by any definition. So how is it that the country who funds, facilitates, sponsors, protects, and militarily contributes to sustained, concerted terrorist activity in the West Bank gets to censor our internet on the basis of terrorism? How is that happening at all? It's like if we want to apply this fairly and evenly, whatever. It's just, I mean, it's not complicated. It's not nuanced. I don't know how much more clear it could be. The Online Safety Act ain't about online safety. The anti-Semitism bill ain't about anti-Semitism. It's all about control. It's all just whatever excuse. Yeah, here's the, like, when is this cartoon from? Control of internet speech. How would you like this wrapped? Anti-terrorism or protect kids? That's gotta be from like 2002 or something, right? So, like, it's just crazy that, like, everybody has known that this is the way it works for literally decades, and yet they're just doing it still. It's just crazy. So just very simply, there's just a massive Israeli Jewish supranational sort of organization that has various manifestations, but it's all just facets of the same organism, the ADL, AIPAC. Like, they're all aligned on all this stuff. And they have these systems, these funnels to access resources and recruit operatives inside America. In fact, maybe we should go to the video of the TikTok censor, the whatever, Jewish inquisitor who now works at TikTok. So people have been posting a video of her from the like American Jewish Congress profiles of Zionist event or whatever it was called. And she makes these statements that kind of crack me up. Obviously, the people she's talking to, it applies to. She'll make these statements where she's like, you know, like most people, after graduating high school, I got an internship with the Jewish whatever foundation. Like, oh yeah, everybody, we all do that. That's all. We all just are provided a paid internship to support our ethnic group immediately after out of college. We're immediately funneled into this, you know, corporate recruiting system where we're guaranteed a top position at a major firm of whatever organization we desire, as long as we promise to uphold the supremacy of our ethnic group. No, nobody else in the world has this. There's like, you know, like most people, I was granted a high powered position for my loyalty to my particular ethnic group. Yes, it's not good. It's not good to have our country so utterly replete with traitors, just filled with people who are not loyal to America. It's not dual loyalty. So dual loyalty is a trope. No, it's loyalty to Israel. It's not dual loyalty. If it was dual loyalty, they'd have some sort of loyalty to America outside of what America can do for Israel. But they don't. They genuinely don't. Not all of them, obviously, but the ones doing this, the ones who don't actually care about our First Amendment when it affects their ethno-state's ability to commit genocide unabated. Yeah, I didn't even mean to just get into Israel right off the bat, but obviously that's the that's a major, you know, topic of conversation. And when you're talking about the global push right now to eliminate free speech as a concept, it's AIPAC pushing it here in America most vociferously, most aggressively, and most effectively. As this isn't something that they're trying to do, it's something that they are doing and are trying to maximize, extend, and make permanent. So, I just wish this wasn't the case, but we have a country that is completely dominated by this AIPAC, you know, lobbying group. And so I've said forever, and it relates to what I was saying in the first segment of this show. We need tangible, achievable goals, and we can work together, left and right, people on all sides who don't want America to be Israel's servant anymore. We can work together to eliminate the organs of manipulation that they use to coordinate their attacks on our freedoms and the and to weaponize our military and our power against their enemies. Can this be something that we all just go, hey guys, let's get AIPAC to register under FARA and force the ADL to abandon its 501c3 designation and get it labeled as a hate group? Because by any metric, it just obviously is. And if we can't do that, like, we really don't control our country. If you can have these dedicated ethnic supremacy organizations, the equivalent, in all intents and purposes, of the KKK, if we can't, at the bare minimum, get them to register as foreign agents, like, we really don't have a country anymore. I think that could be something we could all come together on. Go, hey, AIPAC should not control our government. And if we just get them to register for FARA and put them under the same restrictions any other international foreign lobbying group is under, it would put all of this censorship to rest. It would stop all of the, you know, unified 100% votes for funding all the weapons to Israel. We could put a stop to this. We could stop fighting each other and just get actionable objectives.
I'm only as strong as you are backing me. Have you figured it out yet? This is not like a regular show. The bad guys don't like it for a reason, because we have the information and we have the spirit of victory. So go now to thealexjonesstore.com. The new sale is one of the biggest in the history. Maybe the biggest. Store-wide, buy one, get one free super sale. All the t-shirts, all the ball caps, the widest selection, all of the award-winning supplements, the Shilajit, the Methylene Blue, the Ultimate Life Force Blood Cardiovascular Cleaner, the best out there, Atomic Defense, Total Boost Your Immune System, the Irish Sea Moss, just over the top, everything. All of it, already discounted, buy one, get one free, but here's the catch. You have to be a subscriber, which is $30 a month, and you instantly get $40 to spend in the store. So if you're going to buy something, you instantly make your money back, and then some, simply by becoming a subscriber in the profile. Cancel one click anytime. You need to try our ultramethylene blue, but talk to your physician first. And if you're on SSRIs and things, you can't take it. So check with your physician, or you can look at what you're taking as well and just check there's interactions with it, because it's very powerful. It's very strong. Get the capsules or get the pure liquid. Same thing with the capsule. It's the very best medical grade. Get the Irish Sea Moss. Get the Shilajit. Get the pills, the gummies. It's all there. And then there's the best probiotic, the best prebiotic, the best gut cleanse formula, the very best turmeric, ultimate turmeric. It's just amazing. 95% cumanoid. Great fat, natural fat burning formula. It's all there at thealexjonesstore.com. And the widest selection of t-shirts, ball caps, and more. I said I want the widest selection. It's kind of insane. There's like 500 plus designs now. It's just, it's redonkulous. So get it all right now and fund the Second American Revolution worldwide at TheAlexJonesStore.com. We'll be right back.
The elite are all about transcendence and living forever and the secrets of the universe, and they want to know all this. Some are good, some are bad, some are a mix. But the good ones don't ever want to organize. The bad ones didn't want to organize because they lust after power. Powerful consciousnesses don't want to dominate other people. They want to empower them, so they don't tend to get together until things are really late in the game. Then they come together. Evil's always defeated because good is so much stronger. And we're on this planet, and Einstein's physics showed it, Max Planck's physics showed it, all of there's at least 12 dimensions. And now that's why all the top scientists and billionaires are coming out saying it's a false hologram. It is artificial. The computers are scanning it and finding tension points where it's artificially projected, and gravity's bleeding in to this universe. That's what they call dark matter. So we're like a thought or a dream that's a wisp in some computer program, some God's mind, whatever. They're proving it all. It's all coming out. Now, there's like this sub-transmission zone below the third dimension that's just turned over to the most horrible things is what it resonates to. And it's trying to get up into the third dimension that's just a basic level consciousness to launch into the next levels. And our species is already way up in the fifth, sixth dimension, consciously our best people. But there's this big war trying to, like, basically destroy humanity because humanity has free will, and there's a decision to which level we want to go to. We have free will, so evil's allowed to come and contend, and not just good. And the elites themselves believe they're racing, using human technology to try to take our best minds and build some type of breakaway civilization where they're going to merge with machines, transcend, and break away from the failed species that is man, which is kind of like a false transmission because they're thinking what they are is ugly and bad, projecting it onto themselves instead of believing, no, it's a human test about building us up. And so Google was set up 18, 19 years ago. This was, I knew about this before it was declassified. I'm just saying I've been sources that they wanted to build a giant artificial system. And Google believes that the first artificial intelligence will be a supercomputer based on the neuron activities of the hive mind of humanity with billions of people wired into it with the Internet of Things. And so all of our thoughts go into it, and we're actually building a computer that has real neurons in real time that's also psychically connected to us that are organic creatures so that they will have current prediction powers, future prediction powers, a true crystal ball. But the big secret is, once you have a crystal ball and know the future, you can add stimuli beforehand and make decisions that control the future. And so then it's the end of consciousness and free will for individuals, as we know, and a true 2.0 in a very bad way, hive mind consciousness with an AI jacked into everyone, knowing our hopes and dreams, delivering it to us, not in some PKD wirehead system where we plug in and give up on consciousness because of unlimited pleasure, but because we were already wired in and absorbed before we knew it by giving over our consciousness to the system by our daily decisions that it was able to manipulate and control into a larger system. There's now a human counterstrike taking place to shut this off before it gets fully into place and to block these systems and to try to have an actual debate about where humanity goes and cut off the pedophiles and psychic vampires that are in control of this AI system before humanity's destroyed.
Wait a minute.
Humanity
is only controlled of AI? How'd the pedophiles get in control of AI?
Well, the pedophiles at a whatever level, the devil, whatever you want to call it, this interdimensional thing that gives them advanced off-world technology, the fallen one that's not of this world, is giving them advanced knowledge.
What are you
talking about? How to construct these systems
that
have already been used before on other populations.
What?
That's Satan?
Well, what are you talking about?
That's Satan.
But explain that.
Satan becomes something that, you know, the stupid preacher tells you about who's totally controlled or something you read about on, you know, in the news or TV.
Right.
But this is an interdimensional force that wants to influence us to build something that absorbs us and kills us rather than the divine free will we're given to build something much better that empowers the species. So the species is now making a decision about its entire future.
Where are you getting this from?
That's what it is.
But where are you getting it from?
From looking at all the data, researching it, studying it, watching the enemy. That's the big decision that humanity has now got before us.
Folks, yesterday, Joe Rogan's official show account on X asked who he should have on. I think it's high time he has on Alex Jones again. That was all the way back in his first appearance with Joe Rogan. Still, maybe the most powerful 5-minute clip of Alex Jones ever. I think my favorite part is at the very end. Joe Rogan is just going, but how do you know this? And I was just, he's going, that's just what it is. This is where the sky is blue. That's just what it is.
I'm cutting this on July 30th, 2025. That means you've got 7 days to take advantage of one of the biggest sales in the history of the AlexJonesStore.com. If you buy any of our amazing supplements, the Methylene Blue, the Shilajit, the Irish Sea Moss, all of the great products are there right now. Buy one already discounted, get the very same bottle, the very same product, absolutely free, but it's only running for 7 days. When you're a VIP, for $30 a month, you get $40 to spend in the store, special deals, special discounts, and more. That's how you take advantage of the buy one, get one free. This is only for VIP members, but anybody going to the store should be a VIP because you get $40 for subscribing for $30 a month. You make money on that, and you can cancel anytime. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Thank you for your support.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We got a lot of crazy things happening around the world. Here's, I don't know, maybe the crew can find this. I haven't had time to research it yet, but I keep seeing people post this same story on X at Clash Report. It says, gold dust discovered by villagers in Syria's Raqqa region after Euphrates River recedes. And I keep seeing Muslim people repost this and just say, I'm scared. This is very scary. So apparently, there's a very specific end of times hadith by the Prophet Muhammad about this exact event. Even if you aren't Muslim, this should be of interest to you. And I mean, I know there are prophecies and revelations about the Euphrates drying up. Apparently, there's some sort of Muslim prophecy about gold being found in the Euphrates. I'm not sure, but I keep seeing people post that exact picture. It's like all these Muslim accounts just posting that picture with just like, uh-oh, oh no. It's like, what? What is this supposed to mean? And also, is it true? I'm a little bit suspicious of it being true in the first place. How was it discovered that there was gold in the Euphrates? I'm suspicious that it happened, but it could just be, you go, gold dust Euphrates concept refers to a prophecy from Islamic tradition, specifically a saying attributed to Prophet Muhammad stating that the river Euphrates will dry up, revealing a mountain of gold. This event is described as a sign preceding the end of times, and the prophecy highlights the potential for conflict or greed that could arise from such a discovery. The saying indicates the drying up of the Euphrates will uncover a vast treasure of gold, leading to disputes and death among those who seek to possess it. Prophecy is understood as a minor sign of the end times, meant to serve as a warning about the dangers of greed and materialism. Interpretation: Islamic scholars interpret this prophecy to mean that people will be tempted by material wealth to the point of engaging in violence and conflict. Current situation: recent news reports of gold dust discovered in Syria after the Euphrates River receded have sparked renewed interest and discussions about this prophecy. You know, I personally am not buying it. I mean, literally all we have is this one like picture of a bunch of Muslims dudes in the mud. I don't even see any gold being found, but what this could mean is that somebody has an interest in making everybody think that end time prophecies are being fulfilled. And that is of interest. I got so many stories and videos to get to. I might just have to eschew any organization whatsoever and just start pounding through these, because there's some good news and there's some bad news. Here's some very good news. Here's some very exciting news for you. Some very well-deserved and important news. Senate confirms Trump's pick for counterterrorism agency, a former Green Beret. That's right. Friend of the show, Joe Kent, is the director of National Counterterrorism Center. The Senate confirmed him with a 52-44 vote, despite concerns about his associations with extremist groups and conspiracy theories. Hey, that's us. Hey, they're talking about us. We're the extremists. This is us. We're friends with them. We're friends with Joe Kent. So this is awesome. Democrats opposed Kent's nomination, arguing he cannot be trusted with sense of intelligence due to his promotion of false claims about the 2020 election. Senator Tom Cotton praised Kent for his military service, highlighting his combat deployments and the loss of his wife in a terrorist attack. Kent plans to focus on targeting gang violence tied to migration during his tenure at the counterterrorism centers. That's right, folks. Info warrior, veteran, 2020 election truther, true patriot, and friend of the show, Joe Kent, is now director of the National Counterterrorism Center. Congratulations to Mr. Kent. And again, all jokes aside, he's exactly the right guy for the job. He did tours overseas. He's got his head screwed on straight. And he literally lost his wife to these terrorist scum. And then the, you know, powers that be tried to, you know, throw him in prison over 2020 election questioning. So if anybody in America is qualified and deserves the spot of National Counterterrorism Center Director, it's Joe Kent. So big congratulations to Mr. Joe Kent and all of us for actually putting good people in these positions. We just hope that he can handle what he's about to be under. Meanwhile, ICE entices new recruits with patriotism pitch and the promise of a $50,000 signing bonus. $50,000 signing bonuses. That's very tempting. $50,000 signing bonus? Are they in the NBA? Like, that's wild. Can I join the, do they need a spokesperson by any chance? The U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is launching a recruiting campaign to attract new officers with a $50,000 signing bonus. ICE plans to hire 10,000 new staff to meet an annual deportation goal of 1 million. According to a report by Jason Hauser, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem encourages Americans to join ICE, stating, "Your country is calling you to serve at ICE." Jason Hauser warns staffing challenges could be exacerbated if requirements are waived, leading to higher turnover rates. So, hey, you know, there's a lot of people listening to my voice right now, a lot of young men that are very pessimistic about their future prospects of perhaps ever getting a job. Hell, if I was 25, I might be joining ICE. That sounds fun. That sounds extremely fun. $50,000 signing bonus. You get to carry a gun. And you just run around collecting Mexicans like Pokemon? Yes, please. Thank you. I'll take it. Got to catch them all. I'm built for this. I've trained all my life for this. Me and Pikachu deporting the rapists. That's awesome. So again, there's some good news out there. That was it. Those are the two pieces of good news. Now we got this big old stack of bad news, but there is good news out there. Things are happening, folks. A lot of bad things are happening. ADL-backed bipartisan bill threatens to censor Israel criticism on social media. That's from commondreams.org. Free speech advocates are raising concerns of the new bipartisan bill that would force social media companies to censor criticism of Israel on their platforms. It's, of course, the same bill we just covered, but again, it's just, it doesn't matter if you label it anti-Semitism or child safety or national security or health, right? That's the other one they are going with. Oh, you can't talk about vaccine side effects. You're going to damage everyone's health. Everyone's going to die if you're allowed free speech. It's a reason it's our First Amendment. It's a principle. Frankly, anybody supporting anything about this bill or anything similar to this bill. And of course it's bipartisan because of course it is. They should lose their office because they clearly don't actually believe in the fundamental American values that they're sworn to uphold. U.S. lawmakers push bill that could criminalize hate online. That's how ReclaimTheNet.org is putting this Stop Hate Act by the ADL. The proposed legislation would apply to platforms with at least 25 million unique monthly users in the United States. Although the full legislative text has not yet been made public, a press release outlining its provisions places heavy emphasis on the role of social media in amplifying content from designated terrorist groups, specifically foreign terrorist organizations, and specifically and specially designated global terrorist SDGTs. And again, it's, you know, it's not complicated to see how all of these things are being put into place, where first you get the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism put in place while you're simultaneously working on a bill to criminalize anti-Semitism. So by the time it's all said and done, by the time all of these various threads meet, you know, on a single point, you've got, you're decriminalizing anti-Semitism and you have it on the books that anti-Semitism is questioning Israel at all, questioning whether Israel should exist, questioning Israel's actions, claiming it's committing genocide, pointing out crimes committed by Jewish people or by Jewish interest groups. Basically anybody saying anything negative about Big Fat Randy Fine or any other rabid Zionist genocidal maniac, you'll be removed from the internet. So all these different building blocks are being put into place for the obvious and ultimate intended goal of just silencing American speech when we're speaking up against absolutely anything that our government is doing. It'll be called anti-Semitism because almost guaranteed there will be a Jew somewhere. There will be a Jew somewhere involved in the American government. So, sorry, can't talk about it in a negative fashion. You can't, you know, insinuate or insist or even notice that the actual actions of some of these groups align perfectly with the most far-fetched conspiracy theories and anti-Semitic tropes. And as we've said a million times, that is the definition of hate speech. Hate speech is when reality matches the stereotype. In other words, it's not hate speech for me to say, you know, black people control America or whatever, or to say, you know, Jews steal bicycles. It's like, what? That's not a trope. That's not a stereotype. So it's fine. But if the stereotype is, you know, Jews will use their collective influence to silence, you know, non-Jews talking about them, and that actually happens, if you point it out, that's hate speech. Because reality corresponds with the stereotype. Therefore, talking about reality is you perpetuating a stereotype. And that's very annoying. There's not a lot we can do about it other than ignore their ridiculous demands for silence and continue to talk about the things that people are doing, because people are doing evil things and we have to talk about it if we want it to stop. So silence is complicity in this matter. Congress is gridlocked over censorship bills to suppress, quote, anti-Semitism. Yeah, it's not about anti-Semitism. It's about the freedom of religion in this country and your right to have your own religious beliefs that contradict or even seem like hate to people not of your religious group. That is your absolute right. And if you feel strongly that as an American, you have a right to hold your own religious beliefs, to pray in the way that you see fit, to join a church that corresponds with your religion, to gather in religious ceremonies, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, Christian, pagan, atheist, it doesn't matter. If you care about that right, you should, in fact, you almost have to care just as much about the ability of people to criticize those very same groups, organizations, ceremonies, beliefs, et cetera, et cetera. This isn't complicated. This isn't nuanced. It's just how it is. Everybody can see it for everybody else. When it comes to Jews, for some reason, everybody gets scared. Everybody gets scared of saying what everybody else knows is true. You have to stop being scared. Part of the fright, I think, comes from people, you know, genuinely accepting the contention that to be against Israel or to be against the ADL means that you hate Jews, and people aren't hateful and don't want to be hateful and really feel bad if they think that even unintentionally they've done something wrong to other people. And so it's not necessarily cowardice in terms of like, or being scared of like, oh, the Jews are going to hurt me if I talk about them. But it's like people actually just want to be good people, and they have been tricked into conflating criticism of government policy with hatred of a group of people. So you have to get over that, and you have to understand it's okay. It is not just possible. It's actually, you know, there's nothing contradictory about loving Jews, loving the Jewish people, having no ill will or hard feeling against people who've done nothing wrong, people who have different beliefs or different ethnic background to you. I don't hate them. I don't even dislike them. I love them. And they need to keep their hands off the First Amendment. There's nothing contradictory about this. There's nothing hateful about pointing out the ADL, Israel, AIPAC, when they do bad things, you point it out, you call it out, you criticize it, because you don't want Jews to pay the price for what these radical, cultish, ethno-supremacists are involved in. Stop being scared. Stop falling for it. Stop believing that criticism is hate. Stop believing that complicity or submission to these gangsters' threats, blackmail, and demands makes you a good person. It doesn't. Here we have a headline from GB News that is classic Western liberalism in a nutshell. It says, perhaps everything you would ever need to know about what's happening in our world, the downfall of Western civilization, it's all here in just a few simple words. Like if you had somebody in a coma, woke up after 30 years, said, what's going on in the world? This headline, I think, would kill them. I think they would die if you went asleep 30 years ago and woke up to this. King Charles praised for hosting Ramadan meal and LGBTQ plus lecture at Windsor Castle. Yeah, that's right, folks. He's being praised for hosting a Ramadan meal and an LGBTQ plus lecture at Windsor Castle. There's something about this. There's something about the continuing existence of a king in the first place, who you would think his only position would be to not undercut and sell out his own country from underneath his people, but that is what he's doing. And there's always something particularly interesting to me about the way the left both simultaneously virtue signals and, you know, always acts like they're these radical, anti-elite, eat the rich type people who also just revel in the most, you know, glamorous, outlandish displays of wealth. And worshiping celebrities and worshiping the rich and all this sort of stuff. There's something just particularly, you know, hypocritical and typical about it. But it's like, and it really is ubiquitous, but I wonder like what goes on in the liberals' brains. Like why do they love things that are so contrary to their, you know, most deep held beliefs. I don't really get it. Like liberals love coming to Texas to make movies using the Texas aesthetic, using the Texas, vibe and what's been created here as a vessel for their own completely absurd, ridiculous, ideas, their ideology, their belief system that is just completely at odds with and contradictory to the conservative Christian European mindset that built the aesthetic that they're co-opting. They love the royal aesthetic. They love the Western aesthetic. It's just their beliefs are like the basis of their beliefs are rejecting these things entirely. And it's very absurd. But of course, the absurdity of posting both a Muslim holiday and a gay pride parade in the same place, and the literal head of the Church of England the King of England holding a Ramadan festival in his ancestral home. You know, it's just, I mean, is he a Muslim? I know there have been rumors about that. Like, that would explain a hell of a lot. Like, it seems absurd. It seems like one of these, you know, one of the conspiracies from like the early 2000s where, you know, anti-Muslim sentiment was at its highest ebb in America. It's like the King of England, he's a dirty Muslim. The King of England, really? Then you look at it and you're like, yeah, but is he though? If he's not, why is he celebrating Ramadan? I don't celebrate Ramadan because I'm not a Muslim. He does celebrate Ramadan. Maybe he's a Muslim. I don't think that's that big of a stretch, actually. At Buckingham Palace, the King's Gallery hosted its inaugural event for LGBTQ plus History Month in October, exploring some of the queer figures represented within the royal collection. Yeah. So that is happening. King Charles praised for hosting Ramadan and LGBTQ plus organization at Windsor Castle. I don't want to make this all about Israel, but it is to the point where, according to the New York Times, they're creating a humanitarian disaster that can literally be seen from space. A world of misery from 200 miles up is the headline from New York Times. Even from orbit, the signs of anguish and desperation were visible. On Saturday, a satellite passing over the Gaza Strip captured an image of hundreds of people converging on a convoy of aid trucks as they threaded through mounds of rubble in the southern part of the territory. It was not the first time since the war broke out in 2023 between Israel and Hamas militants that trucks bearing desperately needed humanitarian aid were besieged before they reached their destination. You can see the image here. You can literally see the crowds of hungry people clamoring for a bit of food. You can see the crowds from space. They're so large. And, of course, we have more videos that I could go to of Israelis shooting at the starving people gathered for food as people on X continue to tell me that it's not happening. Which is like, guys, it's just, you got to stop. You got to stop acting like we all can't see what's going on here. It's just, it's not working. It's offensive. And it's like, as much as you might get your emotions riled up hearing about starving children, I don't know. Personally, for me, you see the things about starving children. It's tragic. It's horrific. It just makes you feel like crap that, you know, there's nothing you could do about it. But then when someone comes along and goes, Israel's not starving anyone, dummy. Then that sadness, that depression, that malaise is transformed, it's weaponized into pure, white-hot, hateful rage at you people. So just, you got to stop lying. You got to stop lying about this. If you feel like it's so necessary for you to lie, then you should stop doing the thing that you have to lie about, but you got to stop lying about it. Starving babies to death is one thing. To lie about it, you're really just pushing our buttons. We're going to be back on the other side with more just insane stories in the last 24 hours. I do want to remind you to go now to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com, and take advantage of the buy one, get one super sales. That's still going on? I would have thought this was over. I didn't think this would have lasted as long as it has, but it is going on still. Get it while you can. Buy one, get one super sale. Buy one, get one free on all supplements and apparel. You just got to be a VIP member. That means you pay $30 for a VIP membership. You get $40 in-store credit. You double that with the buy one, get one. You're basically getting $80 worth of product for $30 if you're a VIP member. That's a deal.
There's a reason why supplements are so big and so popular and have such a great result. It's because whether it's your diet, whether it's your exercise routine, the point is you're lacking in some very important vitamins, very important minerals that can make you healthier, live longer, and feel better.
We're also under constant attack, Owen, and that's what's very important. So the modern human living experience, the environment that we subject ourselves to, it's the equivalent of smoking like a couple packs of cigarettes every single day. Like, that's the bad food that we eat. That's the poison in the water, X, Y, Z.
So it's kind of like what happens is, Rex Jones in studio with me, we're about to make a very exciting new product announcement here. So what ends up happening is, whether it's the modern day diet, or whether it's the modern day atmosphere, or whether it's, you know, a sedative state, you're not getting whatever it is you need to make your body function at its highest capabilities.
Absolutely correct. And that's why we created these two new formulas that are now live at thealexjonesstore.com. So we've got Methyl Drive here, and we've also got Power Plant. Now, both of them, at their core, they do around the same type of thing. It's increasing fuel for you to create new mitochondria. It's increasing mitochondrial efficiency. It's reducing oxidative stress and XYZ, other things like that. Now, I want to single out Power Plant really quick. If you're a guy and you're looking for a boost, a healthy, sustainable testosterone boost, we made Power Plant specifically for someone that wants to increase their free testosterone.
I remember when I was looking into supplements and stuff and different things, like, you know, people don't get enough boron. They don't even know what boron is. And I remember one thing that always stuck in my head, and that's, you know, it's just true. Well, what does boron kind of rhyme with, folks? I'll just leave it at that. You know what I mean?
We've got bits and pieces of a system here that comes together and provides you just the antioxidant support you need, the testosterone support you need, the mitochondrial health support you need. It's all there. It's all together. It's in both of these products. You could take both of these at the same time and experience a heck of a lot of benefits. Now, I would say younger, older. You're an older person. You need more overall body support. You need the overall antioxidant support. I would go with the Methyl Drive. But if you're a younger person or someone looking for a performance boost, I would go with the Power Plant.
I can enhance what I'm doing here maybe like tenfold with the right supplement routine.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that statement. Look, the reason why this is called Power Plant is because it has cordyceps in it. Now, of course, the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell and all that, but cordyceps is like an elite top tier, S tier ingredient, which increases the amount of ATP you make, which indirectly helps you make more mitochondria, but beyond that, increases your oxygen carrying capacity. So you want to talk about workouts, you want to talk about power, you want to talk about strength, talk about Power Plant.
And that's what you need, especially when you're doing a heavy lift and you need to have good breathing, or you're doing long form cardio and you need to have strong breathing. That's where this is going to come into play. And when you started to talk about the new product that we just came out with the PQQ and the CoQ10.
Yes, the Methyl Drive.
Folks, I'm telling you, it's like, if I had to do a list of like, okay, if someone said you can pick five things that you're going to get in a supplement, like what are the most important things? Guarantee you, you asked me 100 times, PQQ and CoQ10 are on that list for me 100 times.
Vitamin B12, as-methylcobalamin, the good kind. Magnesium, coenzyme Q10, CoQ10, PQQ, black pepper for absorption. You can't ask for a better catch-all, really. And the synergy that both of these products have with the Methylene Blue is unparalleled. You will not find a better product on the market that's targeted in that specific way, because we made these for you, the customer, and for ourselves, because we believe in the product. We take the product.
TheAlexJonesStore.com to get these new products. Try them for yourself. I know they're going to become a staple. I see Rex working out here every once in a while. We've worked out in the gym every once in a while. And, you know, he's really excited about this stuff. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is The American Journal. Infowars.com, band.video. Please do share those links. Of course, make sure to follow us on X. Share us on X as well. It's literally the least you can do. It's completely free and very easy and extremely helpful. Click that share button. Of course, you want to share band.video links. You can click the share button there, and it gives you a disguised link, since still to this day, band.video is ironically banned. Links to band.video are banned on X. Although, I may have seen somebody post a band.video. That may have changed, but we still give you the disguised link so you can make sure you can post it on Facebook or X or wherever else you spread information and reason. We'll get into some of these other stories, but just about 30 minutes ago, Marjorie Taylor Greene just sort of went off on Israel. Again, I really don't go out of my way to find stuff about Israel. It's just this is obviously the main issue that connects so many of the topics that we cover on a daily basis. And like even without trying it, half of my videos are about Israel, half the stories are about Israel, half the statements made about, you know, politicians. And again, I wish it wasn't the case, but then it's like Trump comes out and is like, oh, if Canada wants to deal with tariffs, they're not allowed to recognize Palestine. Great. Great. As a village crazy lady Mel said, so I guess we're going to have to pay a little bit more for, you know, basic necessities. You'll have to, you know, dish out a little bit extra for your groceries each month because Canada is doing something that Israel doesn't like. So now America has to pay for it. Great. That's great. So Marjorie Taylor Greene posted this morning at around 9 a.m. She said, yesterday I spoke to a Christian pastor from Gaza. There are children starving and Christians have been killed and injured as well as many innocent people. If you're an American Christian, this should be absolutely unacceptable to you. Just as we said that Hamas is killing and kidnapping innocent people on October 7th is absolutely unacceptable. Are innocent Israeli lives more valuable than innocent Palestinian and Christian lives? Well, depends on who you're asking. And why should America continue funding this? The secular government of nuclear-armed Israel has proven they are beyond capable of dealing with their enemies and are capable of and are in the process of systematically cleansing them from the land. Most Americans that I know don't hate Israel, and we're not anti-Semitic at all. We are beyond fed up with being told that we have to fix the world's problems, pay for the world's problems, and fight all the world's wars while Americans are struggling to survive even though they work every day. And many of us, even though we're Christian, no longer want to fund and fight nuclear-armed secular Israel's wars, especially when it leads to starving children and killing innocent people, including Christians. Of course, we're against radical Islamic terrorists, but we're also against genocide. You see, when you've worked your entire life and will only receive a $1,000 Social Security check, but non-citizens were given $3,500 and more, you're pissed off. When you've worked your entire life and all your elected federal officials have recklessly spent and sent your hard-earned money to every foreign country and every foreign war and NGO to the point where we are almost $40 trillion in debt and inflation has caused life to be unaffordable, you're pissed off. And when you've worked your entire life and your elected federal government official refuses to fix the absurd problems that makes all insurance unaffordable, you're pissed off. And for the younger generations who are trying their hardest to make it in this ridiculous system, they feel hopeless. And that makes me burn with anger. None of this is anti-Semitic, and I, along with millions of Americans, refuse that manipulative label. It's the consequences of decades of America's last policies, nonstop foreign intervention, and the American people clearly seeing the truth and suffering. Here's where I stand. No American should face persecution of any kind because of their identity. Not Jewish Americans, not Muslim Americans, not Christian Americans, not white, black, Asian, Hispanic, mixed Americans, and on and on. We've already have hate crime laws against that, and that's not who we are in America, and we have and should continue to work hard to not allow ourselves to become that. My position is this. As a U.S. representative, I represent the American people. My full focus is on fixing America's problems, and right now the problems in America are threatening my children's future. I consider that a war against my children. Every single person, no matter who they are, that continues to enslave my children in debt, continues policies that make their lives unaffordable, and prioritizes foreign countries and foreign wars above my children's lives and livelihoods, I see as an enemy waging the war against my children and their generation. I will continue to push for world peace because that's the type of world I want for my children and all the world's children. I want America to put American companies and American jobs first and protect American land and American homes from foreign consumption. Most importantly, I demand the federal government serve the American people who pay your salaries. September 30th brings another annual government funding deadline. I sincerely hope Republicans out on August recess right now will return in September with a renewed focus to stop funding foreign wars, stop waging the fiscal war against my children and their entire generation. Wow. Another anti-Semitic diatribe from Marjorie Taylor Greene. It's just horrible. All of this hate. All this anti-Semitic hate. It's just tragic. I don't know how you could disagree with Marjorie Taylor Greene. And really the only people who would have a problem with what Marjorie Taylor Greene said is people who just hate white people. And want us destroyed. Hate Christians. Want Christians destroyed. Actually do fulfill and in their own mind see themselves as exactly what Marjorie Taylor Greene just said. Enemies at war with us. Green calls Gaza crisis a genocide, hinting at rift on the right over Israel. Apparently, according to some reports, Trump just told some of his Jewish supporters, Trump said, my supporters are starting to hate Israel. Everybody is. No, everybody is. So again, if this was a Hispanic person, hell, if Marjorie Taylor Greene was a Jewish person saying this, I wouldn't have a problem with it. Most people wouldn't have a problem with it. And you know, it really is simple as, like, what if it was the other way around? And if you just put yourself in the mindset, like, think about the type of person, like, if you as a white person hear a Hispanic person say, hey, I want what's best for my people, and I'm here as a representative of Mexico, you know, if you're in Mexico, a Mexican government politician saying, I'm here to represent Mexico, and I'm sick of Mexico bending the knee for America, and we shouldn't do America's bidding, we should do Mexico's bidding, and we shouldn't be giving all this money to America, whatever it is. Like, imagine the type of person that would hear that and start seething and go, with this absolute scum, how dare they? Because that really is the response to what Marjorie Taylor Greene just said. There are people seething, there are people furious at this. Just think about the type of person that would have that response. And clearly, it can only come from a place of hatred, vengeance, and a desire to see the eradication of people like Marjorie Taylor Greene. There'd be no reason to disagree with her otherwise. So very powerful stuff from Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's proving to be a very brave and based representative, which we have very, very, very few. Although Jim Jordan is also showing he's got some backbone here. The UK censorship files part 2. He published this on the 29th, 2 days ago. UK government tried to censor criticism of itself and debate about immigration during large-scale riots in August 2024. As UK citizens become increasingly frustrated by a system weaponized against them, UK authorities wanted big tech to censor discussions about immigration and, quote, narratives about the police and two-tier systems. So he actually publishes an email between, I believe this is TikTok and somebody in the UK government, where they very explicitly say they want comments about the police and two-tier judgment systems to be eliminated. In recent years, the UK citizens have become increasingly fed up with the double standard in the UK. Mean tweets get you a longer prison sentence than many violent offenses. He posts this: Europe's crackdown on speech goes far and wide. Loosely defined hate speech laws and the rise of social media have led to zealous policing. Connolly received a 31-month prison sentence for posting material intended to stir up racial hatred. Her appeal was rejected. Her sentence was longer than many of the rioters themselves. Sentenced for criminal damage, such as smashing up cars, Lucy got more time in jail for one tweet than some pedophiles and domestic abusers get, said her husband, Ray Connolly. 31 months in prison over a tweet, when we have stories of literal murderers being let out in 6 months in the UK. 31 months for a tweet. 6 months for murdering an 11-year-old with a machete. That is law and order in the UK right now. Britons were rightly concerned about a justice system that treated government critics more harshly than violent criminals. Right of center leaders in the UK weren't justified in criticizing this two-tier system of justice. Right of center leaders were justified in criticizing this two-tier system of justice. So what did Prime Minister Keir Starmer and Technology Secretary Peter Kyle do? New documents produced to the committee show that they tried to censor people who called out the UK's two-tier justice system for what it was. In an email to Big Tech, one of UK's tech regulators, known as DSIT, told platforms to monitor, quote, narratives about a two-tier system. Since then, DSIT directed platforms to come back to us on any measures you've taken in response. The implications are clear. The UK was telling platforms to censor narratives about a two-tier justice system while, of course, implementing that very two-tier justice system. That's right. The British government was trying to censor criticism of itself during the largest British riots in over a decade in August 2024, the oldest trick in the censorship playbook. But the UK government didn't stop there. They also tried to censor public debate about immigration and asylum policy during this period of heightened public debate. One British citizen wanted to know where the government was housing asylum seekers on UK taxpayer dimes, so he filed a Freedom of Information Act request. The British government denied that request. Then, when he posted online about the denial, the British government told platforms to censor him. So he asks about the immigration policy. They deny his request for information. He goes online and said they denied me the request for information, and they get big tech to censor that information. The censorship of the censorship. And it just goes on and on. The UK government also wanted to silence discussion about UK, about Europe's mass migration policies. One popular account noted that certain parts of England now look like another country. UK authorities sent the post to platforms as an example of, quote, concerning content that they should censor. So it's Radio Genoa just saying it looks like it's Islamabad, but it's Manchester, showing a giant crowd in Manchester of nothing but Muslim men. Hey, this looks like Islamabad. And the UK government sends that tweet out to big tech saying, this is the example of the type of stuff we don't want you, you know, we don't want people talking about. Not hate. Not false. No reasonable justification for limitation of the content, let alone censorship. But they want it removed entirely. Why? Because it shows the effects of the policies they've adopted. That's it. Why would they want to hide the effects of the policies they've adopted? Because the effects of the policies that they constantly adopt are constantly horrific and terrible and bad. And if people knew, they wouldn't support them. And again, all this is obvious, but I do feel like I need to like walk people through this because, again, the obvious question is, why would they want to continue policies that were bad? Why does anybody cover up anything? Because they want it to continue. It's just so obvious, so outrageous, in such flagrant contradiction to all of the protestations of democracy and the will of the people, the betterment of society. They knowingly adopt policies that make your life worse, that make your safety lessened, that make your national security lessened, make your national prosperity lessened. On purpose, by design. If that wasn't the purpose of the design, they wouldn't do it. The purpose of the system is what it does. They know that people wouldn't be in favor of what they're doing. They know that what they're doing hurts their own people, but they're desperate for that to continue. And they're willing to censor people to hide the consequences of their actions, to guarantee those actions continue. Why are they so desperate to continue to hurt the British people? Because there is absolutely no other reason. You know, you can find examples, and they do, of the most outrageous things being said online, and they can point to that, and they can put forward a convincing argument that they're genuinely against hate. All right, if they show you a tweet of some guy just saying, you know, F all Pakis, all Muslims deserve a brick to the head. And I can see them pointing to that and going, we can't have this. Again, I think you should be able to say anything. Like, we use a little bit more of that type of language in the UK if they want to continue existing, if they care about survival. They should be a little bit more brazen about their opposition. They should take a note from Carl Benjamin. Talking about deporting them off the cliffs of Dover. I think that is the type of language you need at this point. So, yeah, I'm not actually justifying this statement, but I'm at least trying to illustrate that the most far-fetched sort of thin excuse for controlling speech does not even apply here. If this was a tweet saying Manchester looks like Islamabad and we should kill them, okay, then you can point to that and go, hey, you know, you need to censor this type of stuff because we can't even be having people calling for violence. Or just, you know, you've got people that maybe are from some war-torn country and you can go, look, these guys are refugees. They're just trying to survive. And you got all these people spewing hate at them and demonizing them. You could at least make the argument, even though it's fallacious, even though it's ridiculous, even though it doesn't stand up to scrutiny. The point I'm making is they're not even making that argument. They're not even showing violent tweets or offensive tweets. They're literally sending tweets out of just raw, uncut, unedited, no commentary, just footage of a Manchester street they are trying to censor. So there's just absolutely no excuse. There's no, oh, this is offensive. Well, it's calling for violence. Well, it's demonizing this type of people. It's literally just a video of a street of Manchester saying it looks like Islamabad. Is that a bad thing? I mean, I don't know. You know, what are they saying? That it's somehow offensive to compare something to Islamabad? Would it be offensive if you said it looks like Tokyo, looks like New York City? Why would it be offensive to say somewhere looks like a city in Pakistan? You can't frame that as offensive. You can't frame that as violent or right-wing hateful rhetoric. You just can't. I'm just trying to emphasize how far this has gotten and how desperate they are to cover up all of the consequences of their actions. They're literally demanding big tech take down raw, uncut, factual video of a street in Manchester because the demographic replacement is the point. And if people knew that they were being genocided in their own country and replaced with foreigners, they understood the true scale of this, they would never stand for it. And let's stick to this for a second. I got some videos. I got some videos to go to. Let's go to clip number 15 here. This is a woman named Samantha Smith, who may be a distant relation of me. I don't know, but she looks like my sister. It's kind of crazy. Samantha Smith, I went on TV to discuss Pakistani grooming gangs in my labor-run hometown of Telford, and she was censored, talking about her own experience being the victim of a rape gang, was censored ostensibly under the Online Safety Act, whose purpose is to protect women and children from abuse. Wrap your mind around this one. Let's go to clip number 15 here.
I was on your show last Monday, same time practically. I came off, there was a fantastic response from the public. I was really, really, my heart was warmed by the support and you know, outreach that I received from those that either didn't know what had been going on in Telford for decades. You know, up to 1,000 girls had been reported to have been abused as by grooming gangs since the 1980s, or those that had no idea that it could potentially still be going on and the scale of police, council and social services failings. I went back home, I went back to Telford, and the next day around lunchtime, two police officers banged on my door demanding that I speak to them about my interview.
Really?
Mm.
So the police who did have done nothing for the entire third millennium to date, suddenly were roused to activity by you going on television.
Yeah, they told me that they had gone round to all of the addresses they had on file for me. They had gone to my previous home addresses, the different accommodations that I'd stayed at, looking for me. And eventually they located me, you know, they hunted me down, they tracked me, banged on my door, you know, not too different to when they're knocking on the door of a perpetrator, of a potential criminal. I was on FaceTime to my friend at the time, who said to me afterwards, I genuinely thought you were going to get arrested from the way that they were talking to you. They told me that, quote unquote, when you go on GB News and talk about grooming gangs in Telford, it's our duty to follow up with you.
That's not actually true, is it?
No.
So the police are, among other things, lying to you.
It's funny, I said to them at the time, it was funny that they did absolutely nothing to bring my accusers to justice, but when I went on national TV, and talked about the industrial scale of their failings and their inaction in bringing to justice the perpetrators of vile rape, grooming, sexual assault and child sex crimes in Telford, that they are suddenly spurred into action to come and knock on my door and intimidate me into silence.
It's pretty pathetic, these big butch coppers being so insecure that you going on TV and criticizing them can drive them into action that they otherwise haven't taken for decades. Do you know who actually ordered up this I guess raid is the word for it.
I have absolutely no idea. I know that it was two police officers from the CSE team that knocked on my door. They said they had been working for the force for a year and 6 months respectively, and they were quote unquote trying to make a difference. I don't know what difference they were making by going after a victim rather than the perpetrators, those that have been systematically raping, abusing, grooming, and passing girls round, like, you know, like.
Well, for
decades.
I was abused for a decade and then made to feel it was my fault. And she goes on GB News and gives an interview about her experience, only to have the police show up the next day and threaten to arrest her for speaking out against the abuse that she suffered under. Robert Lowe, MP from the UK, a testimony received by rape gang survivor to our inquiry has been censored. Disgraceful. So this person tried to post the testimony by the rape gang survivor. The official court records, Sammy Woodhouse at Official Sammy UK, tried to post that, and it was blocked with this label, age-restricted graphic content. This content might not be appropriate for everybody. To view this media, you'll need to add your birthday to your profile. X also adds your age, uses your age to show more relevant content, including ads, as explained in our privacy policy. So they are, again, just, it could not be more absurd to pass a law claiming that you're protecting children, and then the law actually being used to censor court testimony about children being abused. Being raped so often and so forcibly that your womb and cervix had to be cauterized in order to save your life was her experience. And this is what was censored, I guess. Fizzy juice bottles filled with boiling water out of a kettle inserted inside you and shaken in order to inflict the maximum pain, degradation, and lifelong injuries. Facial and dental reconstruction required after being violently kicked in the face when you were incapable of completing that 20th sex act of the night because they had forcibly poured just too much alcohol down your throat that day. Being abused so often, so forcibly, your womb and cervix had to be cauterized in order to save your life. That was the testimony that was censored. And that's the tragedy that is continuing at a pace by design as a consequence of the deliberate policy of the powers that be. Police officers also abused Rotherham grooming gang victims. This has been a headline for a while. What we're learning now, and it might not surprise you, is that all of the police were also of Pakistani heritage. So these little girls, even if they were brave enough or whatever to go to the police are in the grooming gangs and rape them more. And the orphanages were in on it. And the prince was in on it. Yeah, they're all in on it.
You were just telling me that you had a brain disease and you, what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy's a functional medicine guy and he got me on methylene blue and that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting in 1890, injects these rats with it and then does an autopsy on these things. And their brain, the brainstem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this methylene blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans and we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP and it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule that should have two hydrogens on it. And like your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1, it's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So methylene blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical-grade methylene blue. And this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning. Next level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS Shilajit. This right here. Look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm going to eat at 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food. Stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there, baby.
Folks, we just saw a video from a young woman named Samantha Smith at Samantha T-A-G-H-O-Y. She said, I went on TV to discuss Pakistani grooming gangs, my labor-run hometown of Telford. The next day, officers banged on my door wanting me to shut up for exposing them. With the Online Safety Act now in force, no one is safe. If it can happen to me, it can happen to anyone. And of course, then we have this story from the BBC. Police officers also abused Rotherham grooming gang victims. Five women who were exploited by grooming gangs in Rotherham as children say they were also abused by police officers in the town at the time. One says she was raped from the age of 12 by the serving South Yorkshire police officer in a marked police car. He would threaten to hand her back to the gang if she did not comply, she says. In a world where you're being abused so much, being raped once by a police officer was a lot easier than the multiple rapes by the gang, and I think he knew that, she told the BBC. We've seen written accounts from these women, plus testimony from 25 other victims of grooming gangs, with some of those women saying that corrupt police officers worked alongside the gangs or failed to act on childhood sexual exploitation. At least 1,400 children were abused by men in Rotherham from 97 to 2013. The landmark report from Professor Alexis J. found in 2014. And the news here, because we've heard this before, and of course, how could it not be true, right? How could this go on without the complicity of the police when it was so obvious now in the open and just thousands of girls? Like, if the police weren't involved, then they would be retarded. I mean, they'd have to be deaf and blind. Obviously, they had to be involved for this to continue as it did. The piece of news that is new to this is that the officers were also Pakistani. That's what had been hidden for a while. From evidence we read in here, the majority of victims identified their perpetrators as being of Pakistani heritage. The new criminal investigation into the police officers of the Rotherham grooming scandal is now being led by SYP's major crime unit under the direction of a police watchdog. And of course, it's a whole of society operation there, as we've explained before and shown video of the fact that orphanages would serve as brothels for the rape gangs. Young girls, no one to care for them, no family to look out for them, would be put in state care. Those state care houses would be run by foreign immigrants, women who would hand the girls out in the morning to the men who would bring the girls back at night, drunk, drugged, and raped and beaten. And the orphanages would clean them up and lend them out the next day to the same guy to do it again as a part of a state operation, the police protecting them, and of course the politicians covering it all up. Let's go to clip number 10. Here's the real numbers of mass migration and how they're affecting the UK. Let's watch.
Just wanted to give a few fun facts for the people saying that mass migration doesn't cause a massive culture shift. In England, as of 2024 and 2025, these numbers are staggering. 554 schools in England have a white child population of less than 2%. Native white children are now a massive minority. And again, not just in a few schools, 454 schools, which comes out to 1 in 4. And to make matters even crazier, 72 schools in England have zero white children at all. Absolutely no white children in 72 schools across England, a native white country. And these facts snuggle with this little minor weird fun fact. Most common baby boy name in England has always been Oliver for generations now. And as of last year, that name has been booted. And now the number one baby name in England is Mohammed. Just this weekend alone, over 49 peaceful protests and gatherings took place to protest the mass migration outside of Asylum Hotel. Because not only is culture being taken over, but then the asylum seekers are receiving free benefits, free airfare, free healthcare, free food, free clothes. Benefits that citizens have been fighting for years. And instead of hearing that and saying, wow, maybe it is becoming an issue. You know, it's not coming from a place of hate, but, you know, maybe some of these countries are really struggling because of this. You know, statistically, bad things are happening. You'll just call everyone racist who tries to talk about it. Need I remind you that if roles were reversed, the left would be having an outroar about it. If white people started overtaking communities that were historically black, and now black people were the massive minority in their own community, or even the Middle East, or really anywhere, there would be outrage. But because it's being done reversed, no, that's just diversity.
More on the other side. Stay with us. It's the American Journal opening up for your calls on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm cutting this on the afternoon of July 30th, 2025. You have 7 days from this date to buy one bottle of any of our amazing supplements, the Ultramethylene Blue, the Irish Sea Moss, the Shilajit, the list goes on and on, Ultimate Life Force, and get a bottle absolutely free. But you got to be a VIP. But that's the best part. This catch is a great deal. You spend $30 a month being a subscriber, you cancel any time, and you get $40 to spend in the store. Special deals, special offers just sent to you, and you can cancel any time. So you make $10 by becoming a subscriber. You can cancel any time. This is only running for 7 days. Experience Ultramethylene Blue. Experience the other incredible supplements. But also, the buy one, get one free goes for the ball caps, the t-shirts, the widest selection of Patriot apparel. Those of you who've ever gotten products, now's the time. It'll blow you away. Get the Methylene Blue, bare minimum, at thealexofstore.com.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is The American Journal. I'm going to open up phone lines for your calls. We're talking about the insane, suicidal, civilizational suicide that the UK and all of Europe is committing in a variety of different ways. And there's not one program accepted from that. I mean, genuinely, immigration is just one thing, and that would be enough to swamp Europe and just destroy it utterly forever. But then on top of that, you have the fact that they've deindustrialized and crippled themselves by eradicating their ability to create energy to save the earth, while China has just skyrocketed in, greenhouse gas production. They're just committing suicide. They're just literally committing suicide. Now they want to go to war with Russia. So what that woman laid out was that there are something like 540 plus schools in the UK with a white population of 2% or less. By itself, it's just wild. It's wild. Imagine being a little English kid in a school, 98% foreigners. 75 schools have 0% ethnic English students. Muhammad, of course, is the number one baby name as of last year, but that's deceptive because they spell Muhammad like 5 different ways. And so instead of categorizing all of those together as being the same name, they have Muhammad with an O and Muhammad with a U and Muhammad with 2 U's and whatever. And so it shows up as 5 different names. So it's just that particular spelling of Muhammad is now the number one baby name. But if you were to combine all of the spellings of Muhammad, it would have been the top baby name probably for the last 10 years. And there have been 49 protests in just the last week at these migrant hotels. And, of course, that's what's being criminalized. And the people involved in these are being arrested, rounded up, and imprisoned, while the immigrants themselves are being given police escort to and from their colony, their colonization camp. So we're going to take your calls on that and any topics. Give us a call. The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539. We have some pretty big bombshell stories I've saved for this last hour, including this one from Fox News. Crossfire hurricane. Kash Patel found thousands of sensitive Trump-Russia probe documents inside burn bags in a secret room in the FBI. Is this true? We don't know. It sounds like the plot of a Hollywood movie. I can't see the FBI being this sort of careless with this, but I hope it's true. FBI Director Kash Patel found a trove of sensitive documents related to the origins of the Trump-Russia probe buried in multiple burn bags in a secret room inside the Bureau, sources told Fox News Digital. Sources told Fox News Digital that the burn bag system is used to destroy documents designated as classified or higher. They told Fox News Digital that multiple burn bags were found and filled with thousands of documents. One of the documents FBI officials found in a burn bag was a classified annex to former Special Counsel John Durham's final report, which includes the underlying intelligence he reviewed. The declassification of the classified annex is being done in close coordination between CIA Director John Ratcliffe, Patel, National Director Intelligence, National Intelligence Director Tulsi Gabbard, Attorney General Pam Bondi, and National Acting Secretary, National Security Agency Director William Hartman. The declassified annex will be transmitted to the Senate Judicial Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley, who ultimately will release the document to the public. Sources exclusively briefed Fox News Digital on some of the contents of the classified annex, including that the U.S. intelligence community had credible foreign sources indicating the FBI would play a role in spreading the alleged Trump-Russia collusion narrative before the Bureau ever launched its controversial Crossfire Hurricane probe. So that's pretty crazy. So one of the classified documents said foreign sources. You had like UK or maybe Russian sources, and whether these sources were reporting to the FBI or the FBI was intercepting these communications. Regardless, you had foreign sources who were picking up chatter and saying, hey, it looks like the FBI is about to launch a fake investigation to try to frame Trump as a Russian agent. They knew what they were doing before Crossfire Hurricane ever even was launched. They told Fox News Digital that while it may not have been exactly clear at the moment what the intelligence collection meant, with the benefit of hindsight, it predicted the FBI's next move with, quote, alarming specificity. Ultimately, the release of the classified annex will lend more credibility to the assertion that there was a coordinated plan inside the U.S. government to help the Clinton campaign stir up controversy connecting Trump to Russia. The source, who was granted anonymity to discuss sensitive intelligence matters, has not been made public. According to Fox News Digital, mere days after this intelligence was collected, the FBI launched Crossfire Hurricane, the source said. It's hard to see how Brennan, Clapper, and Comey are going to be able to explain this away. Patel and his team discovered previously undisclosed sensitive compartmented information facility, a SCIF, in the FBI headquarters. They reached out to FBI directors, former FBI directors Christopher Wray and James Comey, but have not received any comments in response. Just think about this, Patel told Rogan last month. Me as director of the FBI, the former Russiagate guy, when I was first in the Bureau, found a room that Comey and others hid from the world in the Hoover building, full of documents and computer hard drives that no one had ever seen or heard of, locked the key and hid access and said no one's ever going to find this place. Well, his staff has been working through the documents, some that are related to sensitive investigations, including the FBI's original Trump-Russia probe, known inside the Bureau as Crossfire Hurricane. It's unclear what the latest documents cover specifically, but sources told Fox News Digital that the most recent discovery was pursuant to an investigation request from Grassley. He has turned over the information to Grassley. And apparently this is, you know, all coming out. With everything that Trump has done, I mean, at this point, his only hope is to arrest some of these higher ups, and we have more than enough information already, more than enough evidence years ago to get convictions on some of these charges. I guess we're getting more. I guess there's more information. I guess there's more data that's being compiled, more documents that are being found. I don't think it's necessary. I think we need the convictions. I think we need the trials. I think we need the grand jury convictions in order to get this ball rolling. I don't think we need to continue gathering evidence. At some point, you've gathered enough evidence. At some point, with the text messages and the internal documents and the investigative memos that were hidden and the, you know, John Bolton knowing about it, not reporting it to Trump under his, when he was the director of national intelligence or whatever position he held. At a certain point, the leaks from Comey, the lies in front of Congress, clearly committing perjury, just blatantly lying to Congress's faces when asked about this stuff. We now have, you know, provably found evidence of their perjury, and nothing's happening yet. So at a certain point, you stop collecting evidence. you got more than enough evidence. You have far away and exceeded the requisite beyond a reasonable doubt threshold. Now we need to charge them. Now we need to put them in jail. Now we need to get the grand juries. Enough of the gathering evidence. My God. I've said a million times. It's like you're investigating a murder and you got the murder weapon and you got the guy's confession and you got the note he wrote before the murder saying, I'm going to murder this guy, and you got the murder on tape. It's time to go to trial. It's time to get the conviction. And instead, it's like the investigator being like, oh, well, you know, what if we found documents that showed that he'd pre-planned it even earlier? And it's like, it doesn't matter. Just get the conviction. You've proven it. You have all of the evidence you could ever possibly need. And we found more. Well, great. Who cares? Charge them. Arrest them. Do something to cripple this cabal that has put us in such a dangerous position. We'll go out to calls after this next story, but there's another one where it's just like, this was like not even a top story. This was like not even on the front page. This is insane. Virginia city councilman set on fire by maniac who dumped 5-gallon bucket of gas on him. A city councilman in Virginia was savagely set on fire by a lunatic who stormed into his workplace carrying gallons of fuel and ignited the lawmaker Wednesday morning in the latest sickening attack against an American elected official. Danville City Councilman Lee Vogler was allegedly set on fire after Shotzi Michael Buck Hayes, 29, barged into Showcase Magazine, a local monthly publication, and dumped a 5-gallon bucket of gasoline on the politician around 11:30 a.m., according to the Danville Department Police. And the Danville Police Department and the outlet's publisher, Andrew Books. Vulgar, a 38-year-old married father of two, managed to escape the office and ran to the front of the building, but the monster followed him and torched him. This type of senseless violence has to stop, Brooks said in an emotional video published on Facebook Wednesday morning, where he described the horrifying moment. Hayes forced his way into their offices and drenched the councilman with fire accelerant. You do not have a right as a human being to get upset with somebody enough to lash out and attempt to harm them in that way, much less this way. So this is like just the latest. Now, Brooks noted that the victim of this was awake and talking following the terrified incident, but he was injured, went to the hospital, and was burned by this gas fire attack against a Republican city councilman. So this is just the latest, I guess, added to the list of radical leftist violence committed seemingly on a weekly basis in this country. For some reason, this is never presented as a trend. This is never presented as, you know, indicative of a wider pattern of behavior by the left. For some reason, despite every week there being some new attack against, whether it's burning down Tesla dealerships or staging military action against ICE agents, or lighting city councilmen on fire, it seems like every week there's another example of vicious, violent, leftist political attacks against the right wing. And every time it's presented as a totally unique, unprecedented, but mental illness outbreak. What do we not understand? The left is committing terrorism in this country on a regular basis. It almost seems like I forget how many of these things happen. Like even just showing that mugshot reminded me there's some other guy that was just arrested like a few days ago for some political violence. I forget. It just like happens so regularly, and always it's treated as just, you know, oh, well, it's just tragic, and oh, this violence has to end. This isn't tragic. It's an attack. They're at war with us, and they're committing violence in a terroristic manner. Why can nobody see this? Why does this need to be spelled out for everybody? We've gone over this over and over, but you know, the classic example is Black Lives Matter, where they can take literally one black guy being killed by one cop and they can trick everybody. Everybody in the country suddenly goes, wow, cops are killing black people. This is a trend. It's a pattern. It's a crisis. It's a pandemic of black people being murdered by cops. It happened one time, and they extrapolated out as if it's something that is a trend, that's a pattern, that it's a phenomenon that we keep seeing when it never happens. But somehow, when you have weekly examples of not just like, oh, you know, there was a protest and one protester punched another one. We're not talking about like the most minor political violence you've ever seen where it's just, you know, oh, they left a flaming bag of poop on the, pro-life center's doorstep. They're burning buildings down. They're staging ambushes against ICE officers, firing at them, modified AR-15s in a coordinated, well-rehearsed attack. They're lighting people on fire. They're running people over with cars. They're shooting people in cold blood. And every time it's treated like a totally unique and unprecedented event. This is a pattern. This is a trend. You should not need the media to spell this out for you because they never will. But you can identify a pattern yourself. You can do it. I believe in you. I don't even know if they mentioned he was a Republican in this article. In this New York Post article, at least for the whole first page that I read verbatim, they don't once mention that he's a Republican conservative politician. Doesn't say it anywhere in here. There you go. He's a member of the Virginia Young Republicans. But again, it's just infuriating that you just have these like blatantly political attacks and they treat it as just like, oh, it's an example of mental illness and gosh, this violence is so bad. No. This is leftist terrorism, this is left-wing democratic terrorism trying to kill a father of two because that's what they've been driven to at this point, I guess. We have more stories to go to, but let's go out to your calls. I know Patty in Boston has something he's very excited and eager to share with the InfoWars audience. Patty from Boston, very good to hear from you. You're on the air, sir.
Look, man, I'm as enraged about the Israeli government as you are, and I think this is one of the very few, things that.
Hold on, Patty. I'm having trouble hearing you a little bit. If you can move a little closer to your phone, I'm not sure if I'm on speaker or something. Your quality.
I'm not on speaker. I'm on speaker. I just had to close the door. Anyway.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
A little bit better. It's just not as good as it normally is, but I can understand you. Go ahead.
Okay. So, yeah, my problem is that the Israeli government is run by complete scumbags. And I think we agree on that, mostly, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is that correct?
Oh, very much so. Okay. You're too kind, Patty. Yes.
Yes. So the problem is that you can't say that on most, media outlets. You can't say that without being called an anti-Semite. And right. The fact of the matter is, I am not an anti-Semite, but I think the Israeli government, as it is currently constituted, is a pack of dirtbags, right?
Yeah, so, absolutely. Oh, and religious extremists, too.
You're damn straight. I mean, that's exactly what it is, right? So when we talk about the reaction to obviously a horrible situation in Gaza, like Hamas is a terrorist organization that should be eradicated from the face of the planet. But you don't do that by bombing hospitals, right?
Right.
So the fact, and this is crazy that we agree so much on this because, normally we disagree on everything. But this is just absolute insanity. And if you can't just agree on the basic fact that it's not okay to kill civilians, especially when you're doing it on purpose, which I believe the Israeli government is doing, that is revolting. It just is. And the fact that the Israeli military is capable of doing a whole lot more, as far as precision, violence, right? They could target Hamas a little bit better than they're doing. They don't want to, man. They don't want to.
Oh, for sure. No, well, look, Hamas, you know, they're finally actually going into, they're finally actually putting the boots on the ground in certain parts of Gaza, which they've avoided doing up till now. And they're finding Hamas is setting ambushes that are like more sophisticated and more effective than they ever have before. So like clearly they haven't even, you know, hampered Hamas. Hamas is still operating basically at full capacity. So yeah, they haven't even tried to eradicate Hamas, Patty. I think you're exactly right on that.
No, and what they're intending to do is to commit an act of genocide. And what a lot of people don't understand, a lot of evangelical Christians don't understand that there are actually a lot of Christians in Gaza and in the West Bank. There are a lot of Arab Christians. If you don't know that, it's because you don't want to know that. It's because you don't want to pay attention to it. Yeah. And what I'm saying is there are a ton of Christians in Gaza and in the West Bank. And for some reason, the Israeli lobby in this country, the AIPAC lobby and all these people, they've decided to ignore the fact that there are a ton of Christians in Israel and in the Palestinian areas. I don't know why they don't care about that, but you talk about anti-Semites. Well, Lord, that's some anti-Semitic stuff right there. Like,
absolutely.
The fact that they don't care.
And I mean, this is, it just shows you how much Israel, look, Israel messed up so bad, Patty from Boston is co-signing Marjorie Taylor Greene. He's agreeing with Marjorie Taylor Greene. If you know anything about Patty from Boston, this is a snowball in hell situation, all right? This shouldn't happen. It shouldn't be the case. So, Patty, is this not an opportunity? Can we not come together, left and right? Foes we may be when it comes to a lot of, you know, domestic things. Is this not an opportunity for everybody of conscience in this country to come together and say, we do not want to be party to this. We do not want to be complicit in this senseless murder. I mean, I saw somebody the other day, or just, you know, earlier today, it was some tweet of when Canada said they were recognizing Palestine, and somebody said, I guess Canada is rejecting Western civilization. It's like, no, Western civilization doesn't allow for punitive bombing campaigns against starving people. That's not Western civilization. That has nothing to do with Western. That's some sort of barbarous Eastern collective punishment madness that we rejected 200 years ago. So is this not an opportunity, Patty?
All I can say is hallelujah. Holy, where's the Tylenol? I agree with you, and I want to punch myself in the face for having agreed with you, but it's just the reality that we have to deal with in this situation. Yes, you're 100% right. 100% right.
So that's what I see as the big elephant in the room, is everybody's talking about the right being divided and the left struggling to, you know, get a message that works. Meanwhile, there's the majority of the left and the majority of the right that align at least on this one topic. We shouldn't be the servants of Israel. We're America, and we should uphold American values, which do not include collective punishment.
If you think that letting kids starve is okay, then you need to think about what the hell you're thinking about. Like, you really need to, I mean, it's not okay to let kids starve. It's not okay. I don't care whose kids they are. You know what I mean? Even if,
for
you
sure.
Know, you disagree with their political, you know, whatever. It's not important. Like, these are children who are starving, and they're doing it every single day. And it's not all right, man. It's not all right.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's why they have to just deny that it's happening, because there's no excuse for it, right? So the comment I always get is people going, Israel's not starving anybody. And it's like, but they just obviously are. So just stop lying about it. If it's so wrong that you feel the need to lie about it, then you shouldn't be doing it. It's not that complicated. Again, I wonder how much, you know, effort is going into trying to keep the left and right divided right now, because Israel knows that if we were to come together on an anti-Israel ticket, it'd probably dominate, and then they'd be screwed and we'd be free, and they're really trying to prevent that from happening. Thanks for the call, Patty. Fantastic stuff. I'll go straight out to your calls on the other side.
All the guests, dozens of them that have taken it, within 45 minutes to an hour, have varying degrees from extreme energy and feel really great, fog lifting, to just over the top crying. It feels so good. Cleans out the cells, just does incredible things. RFK Jr. loves it. We've got the strongest ultra methylene blue. But he's going on Owen in about 30 minutes. My show just ended and I forgot to do this. Don't forget when he's on Owen to tell us what he felt. And if he doesn't feel it, We'll put that out. So, Stuart, go ahead and take a half dropper or so. That's about a half dose. And then go ahead and shove that down. And then we're going to find out what happens to you. We'll see. Most people, it takes a little about 30 minutes, starts peeing after a couple hours. But just tell people what you think. And if you don't feel it, we're going to tell everybody.
20 minutes later.
I can feel a definite, like, an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now? Now that you have your energy spike?
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely, I feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was.
Well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each, and I'm going to go and do a longer-term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
Several weeks later.
You just saw an ad for Methylene Blue. You were here a few weeks ago. And I do this with every guest, more than 50 of them now. Every person has had clarity, energy, a fog lift is the most common. But what's really good is the long-term effects for your stamina, your energy, your libido, your how hard you can work out. It's amazing. So I had forgotten when he was coming in, we gave him a bottle because he loved it.
Almost gone.
I had forgotten to ask you if you listened and did it long-term. So just briefly, tell people the short-term effect and then now a few weeks later, the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, I do some Methylene Blue about a half hour before. And it just gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
We'll give you some. How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Something like that. You give me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, I'm almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support at thealtruistwork.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, now 4 or 5 months ago, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it, I go, I don't know. I was lifting way more, going way harder. And then I got really exhausted after about a week because the same thing happened to Rob Dew, who's a great long distance, bike rider. So he's quite the athlete. He said he was biking so hard up hills and stuff that he actually had to pull over because, his heart was going crazy. I mean, this stuff's wild.
Yeah, it's good. I like it better than doing like a 5 hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
It's not a stimulant. It just skips the oxidization process somehow.
So I've been using it while I'm out there doing search and rescue. So I'm almost out.
You're saying you love it for working out. Has it gotten better over time, or what long-term thing have you felt, or if nothing?
Well, I think the main thing is it gives me a better workout, and that has good results over time. Yeah, for sure.
That's what I found without even knowing.
Yeah.
And then O'Keefe's like, oh, it made my vision better. And Rob Dew goes, we have a bunch of callers already saying that. Did you see these studies about it, like curing glaucoma? And I'm not going to say, we're not selling it as a drug. I'm not saying it's going to do that. I'm like, God, this stuff's crazy. No, they don't want you to know about it. It's like ivermectin.
Right, exactly. Old school stuff.
But you can't take it if you're on SSRIs. And folks, it's so strong. Talk to your doctor first because it's not a game. Ours is really strong. If you'll just try it, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. We'll be right back with Stuart Rhodes.
Into the caller's hands. You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, folks. We'll go directly out to your phone calls now. Although I'm seeing some breaking news that I'll present here in just a second. We got some more stories covered. Let's go out to your calls first. Let's go to Cameron in North Carolina. Go ahead, Cameron, on line two. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Harrison. I just want to follow up on that last caller. I was reading the news about all these countries that are recognizing Palestine as a state coming up. I think the timing is a little interesting, but that's neither here nor there. What's really interesting to me has been Trump's response to all this and how he's saying, well, we can't get a trade deal, if you're recognizing Palestine. And that's where I want people to really realize that it isn't just AIPAC. It isn't just Israel. It there's a quote in the Times of Israel today or the Jerusalem Post or something like that, that he had told one of his donors, specifically one of his Jewish donors, that that MAGA is starting to hate Israel. It's not hate. None of this is hate. When we say that there's an overrepresentation of a small percentage of the population controlling our government and our media and our culture and all of these things, that is not hateful. That is a pretty easy observation once your eyes have been opened to it. So my question to you is, when do we really like focus on where the fight is and realize that it's not just, you know, a lobbying group that's giving money to our congressmen? It's much more deeply penetrated than that, I think it seems. So that's my question. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you. And, you know, I think you're right. I'd say, you know, it's also the other thing where it's like, it wouldn't even be a problem if, like, we were doing great. If America was doing great and you said Jews ran America, who would be mad? Right? If America was like killing it across the board, we're thriving and prosperity and we're expanding and growing and the birth rate is skyrocketing. Like, if things were going well, and we weren't just constantly screwed over by the government endlessly forever, then Jews would be proud to say they ran the government. But it's the fact that what our government does to us and what our government prioritizes is completely contradictory to what's in our best interest, which is what makes the whole thing a problem. And as I, you know, pointed out endlessly, it's not about the money either. It's not about the lobbies giving money to people. That's one way that they, you know, show support and therefore maintain control. But it has a lot more to do with the connections, with the, you know, deals that are made behind the scenes, with the fact that you'll get good press coverage if you go along with the AIPAC agenda. It has less to do with money than it does getting access to this nationwide pool of resources and networking that they're able to provide. So, you know, I just want the organs of oppression to go away. I think that has to be the target and the goal and the, you know, first item on the checklist is like tangible, reality-based, achievable goals. And, you know, some of these are more far-fetched, but would certainly have a major impact and are less far-fetched now than they ever were. Things like ending the Fed. Right. Ending the Fed would be cutting the head off the snake, reclaiming our ability to produce our own money and have our own solid, whether gold-based or whether just, you know, based in the economic potential of our country, but our own currency that's not lent with interest from a private bank. That would be one thing we could achieve. Getting AIPAC to forcing AIPAC to register under FARA would massively decrease their ability to manipulate people. Forcing the truth about the ADL out and simply, you know, applying the same rules that would apply to any other hate group to the ADL and punishing them or removing, you know, the protections they have as a nonprofit, as a charity, as a 501c3 or whatever they're incorporated as. Remove those protections because they publish hate material. And the material that they publish and the SPLC published is used by terrorists for violence, right? The SPLC will put out lists of right-wing terrorist organizations. They'll include, like, you know, just pro-life Christian organizations, and then they get firebombed. Like, they're complicit. They provide a hit list, and then leftist terrorists go out and attack them. How are they even a organization still, let alone under the protections that charities enjoy in this country? So it's like, yes, these are Jewish organizations, and they are manipulating the American governmental system for the benefit of Israel and the wider Jewish diaspora. It's absolutely true. That doesn't even need to be part of the conversation, honestly. If that is an effective way to bring about the dissolution of these organizations, fine. But if it's a impediment to dissolving these organizations, then it doesn't matter. What matters is getting rid of these organizations, abolishing the ability of these cabals to manipulate things on the governmental level. And it doesn't matter to me what ethnicity they are. They shouldn't be allowed to do it. They happen to be Israeli. They happen to be Jewish. They happen to be working for Israel. Fine. But if it was Catholics in the Vatican, I would feel exactly the same. So I get where you're coming from. I just, yeah, you have to understand that we're dealing with a population that really has been thoroughly, thoroughly brainwashed into believing that you're an anti-Semite if you don't like Israel, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. And so if you're making the argument that we need to get rid of these things because Jews bad or whatever, then you're really only hampering your ability to actually deal with these actual organs of oppression. That's my take on it. I hope that's clear. Thank you very much for the call, Cameron. Appreciate it. Let's go to Henry in Chicago now. He's disappointed. Trump is a Zionist. It's true. It's true, Henry. We always knew he was a Zionist too, right? I mean, that was never a, well, I don't even know if he's a Zionist. I don't even know if that's the right word. A Zionist is somebody that, like, you know, spiritually, like religiously believes that the Jews have an absolute right to, you know, all of biblical Israel. And people like Joe Biden, you know, come out and say, I'm an ardent Zionist. I don't know if I've ever heard Trump say, I'm a Zionist. I don't think it's spiritual or religious or that he, like, has any strong beliefs about that. I think he just treats Israel kind of like any other country. And it's just a country that has a lot of connections with America and is deeply involved in America. And he sort of buys into, and to some degree, it's true, the, you know, necessity of having Israel on our side if we want to keep things under control in the Middle East. But that's a semantic point. I just don't think he is a, by definition, a Zionist. He is just very, very pro-Israel. But Henry, what's your take on this?
Okay, my take is he lied to every single American, especially the people that supported him. He was saying, I love Israel. You know, I'm going to put the embassy in Jerusalem. He does everything that his donors, especially Mrs. Ellison, they give him $100 million for him, the Jewish lobby. Now, I think the way to stop the funding of Israel, we should get Trump and every single congressman and politician that voted to give money to Israel on the 18 U.S. Code 1091, because they're committing genocide, okay? Now, he said, oh, I forced free speech. He lied. People need to understand that only Congress, nobody can breach the First Amendment. Not even Congress can make laws. So when they come with the Child Safety Act and all of that, people need to understand what the First Amendment is and your Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence. Because this government has become something that I didn't vote for, I didn't rally for, and we need to do something because you're losing the Republic. Now he's going after the Fourth Amendment, the 14th Amendment. It's in violation of the Constitution. And if he really wants to get rid of the birthright, get rid of Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, his wife, Ivanka, and all of them, and 150 million Americans. Because all they're doing is case law, which is unconstitutional.
Well, we've talked about this before, Henry, and I don't agree with that interpretation because I think that you change the law moving forward. So birthright citizenship isn't a thing anymore, but that doesn't mean that people who had birthright citizenship before are stripped of it. So, I think birthright citizenship is a scam. It never should have been interpreted that way. And so, you know, I think it's good that Trump's getting rid of birthright citizenship. But I get what you're saying. I think a lot of people are feeling the same way you are. My only defense of Trump is recognizing the power of the system that he's up against. And, you know, obviously I want him to do more. I'm frustrated at the lack of action. I'm frustrated at the lack of, you know, tangible things to point to show, you know, nobody's been put in prison. Yeah, the, you know, migration has stopped. And for the first time in 50 years, the population of migrants in America has gone down rather than up for the first time ever in half a century. So, like, these are good things. And he's doing some. I'm just as frustrated as anybody else. But I also, you know, gotta give Trump a little bit of leeway in understanding that he is in the belly of the beast right now. And despite all the powers that he has as president, he's still up against this, as JFK put it, monolithic and ruthless worldwide conspiracy trying to destroy the United States. So, you know, the problem is, again, damned if you do, damned if you don't. If we don't have Trump aggressively attacking these things, in almost a dictatorial fashion, then we're seeing very little movement and very little justice being achieved. Damned if you follow the Constitution to the letter. Because he's not becoming a dictator. He is doing things lawfully. And that's why everything's being hamstrung and bottled up and not actually achieving anything. Or he can become a dictator. He can just, you know, use his incredible popularity to, you know, justify a total governmental reorganization. And he could do that. He can do it in a variety of different ways. But then we have a dictator. And then, you know, who's after Trump? And what powers has he accrued to himself and to his office that will then be occupied by somebody else? And how will they be trusted with it? So damned if you do, damned if you don't. If he doesn't act like a dictator, the Democrats get back in power and wreak vengeance on all of us for daring to vote for somebody they don't like, throwing us in prison for peacefully protesting. Or if Trump does what he needs to in order to wrestle America back from, you know, foreign interests and the control of the globalists, then we're going to have to, like, abolish parts of the Constitution that are hamstringing him right now, which is incredibly troubling. And again, been the case since the beginning of his administration with every judge, you know, blocking everything he did. And I'd always say, like, these judges need to stop, because the only solution I see available is for us to just stop having judicial review of executive orders, in which case you effectively have a tyrant now. So we don't want that. We want the judges to stop interfering and let the president pursue his agenda like we all voted for. So damned if you do, damned if you don't. We're in a very, very tricky situation. I do have at least some amount of empathy for Trump in having to deal with all of this as a single person. It's a very difficult weight on his shoulders. Thank you for the call, Henry. Let's go to Bart in Georgia. He wants to talk about replacement migration. Thanks for calling in, Bart. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Before we talk about the cancer that is replacement migration in UK, let's talk about methylene blue. I'm not paid to say this, not one dime. This is the best product you guys have ever had. You guys got to order it at the alexjonesstore.com/Bart with a capital B. Now, again, this migration, I don't think there's anything that can be done to save UK. We just should talk about it all the time to make sure that this does not happen here.
You know, I wondered, I think I speculated about this either on American Journal yesterday or on the War Room the day before, about, like, is what happening here that they're running the simulation and they're basically deciding that some of these things, the goals have been achieved. Like, now you've got Starmer and others talking about, we got to stop the dinghies. We got to, you know, we're going to have to, you know, deport some people. Like, they're actually mainstream figures and Europe are starting to, for the first time, recognize the damage that replacement migration has caused. And it's like, this is like suspicious because they're clearly the ones behind it. They clearly have been shutting people up about the cause. And all of a sudden, they recognize, all of a sudden, they go, oh, this is too much. And it's like, okay, have they run the simulation and just went, okay, we've achieved the necessary level of immigration and now, you know, we can pretend to be against it again? You know, with all these countries coming out against Israel and saying they're going to recognize Palestine, has Israel just run the simulation and gone, we already won against Palestinians. It's just a mop-up situation. Now we're just going to, like, you know, take care of this stuff. So you guys can come out against us now. Now you guys can act like you're against us and you can, you know, score some points with your local constituents by pretending to stand up against Israel. But it's already done. It's over. We've passed the threshold. So now you can come out against this stuff. I have to wonder, because they've reversed their position on a lot of this stuff with no explanation, with no reason. And I got to wonder, is it just too late for the UK? They just said, okay, we've reached that, you know, whatever it is, the maximum capacity, the minimum capacity. We've reached that threshold to where now it doesn't matter what they do. We've destroyed England. It's just a matter of time. So now come out, you go ahead and come out against the migrants, because, you know, for this plan to work, the only thing that really needs to happen is the establishment as it is needs to maintain, needs to persist. So if they've run the simulation and said, hey, if we keep pushing the immigration thing, it's going to cause people to rise up and they'll replace the establishment with one that will really aggressively deal with this. So now in order to sustain our control of the establishment has to pretend to serve the people just enough to keep them satisfied and not revolting so that the program can continue regardless. I know this is all kind of complicated and speculative, but I gotta wonder. Yeah, UK Prime Minister under pressure from Farage tightens migration rules. It's like, okay, is this just a minor symbolic meaningless action because demographically the tide has come in and there's nothing you can do about it now. It's troubling to think that's the case, but I don't see any other reason why these people are suddenly realizing all this crap is asinine and wrong. Thanks for the call, Bart. Let's go to Dominatrix in the Matrix on line 7. Go ahead, Dominatrix. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison, at Queen of the Juicy on X, Candace K. Morris on Facebook, and I know that your crew is really great at finding recordings, Harrison. And if y'all go back to Trump's birthday in June during the military parade on the Fox News coverage, what you're going to find whenever you're watching this, when they're live streaming the drones and the robots around that section, what your crew is going to find is one of the Fox News broadcasters saying, Israel will never have to depend on anyone else again. They'll have the most powerful military. Now, this was during the United States military parade live streamed on Fox News while Fox News was doing Israeli propaganda, promoting them to never have to rely on anyone. We've been funding them. We've been funding their mass killing spree. They have us under surveillance doing brain drains on the whole population, taking all of our intellectual property. Tel Aviv is the new Silicon Valley. They are trying to take all of our intellectual property, including weapon systems, and their plans are to be the most powerful military after just us giving it to them.
Mm-hmm.
If your crew will go through, y'all will find exactly what I'm saying. Fox News, I was watching with my mother, and I looked at her when they said, Israel will never have to depend on anyone ever again. They'll be the most powerful military. And I said, can you believe they have the audacity to say this to us during our military parade on Fox News? Can you believe that they have the audacity?
Yes.
And,
sorry, the answer to that question is yes, I absolutely believe that. It's sad, but yeah, it's not even, the worst. It's pathetic. I completely understand what you're saying, but it's like, at this point, you cannot be surprised. You cannot be surprised by how Fox News feels about Israel. I'm joking, but, yeah, I mean, it's very out in the open now. You can't deny it. And that maybe is the most ridiculous thing about this idea of, you know, the ADL's hate speech demands, censoring people on big tech. Like, if I say that the Israelis are starving Gazans, they'll call that hate speech. If Randy Fine says, let them starve, that's going to be allowed. It's not even that this stuff is hidden or anything. It's just obvious. It's in your face, and it's incredibly offensive that they tell you to not notice it. It's infuriating. Thank you so much for the call, Dominatrix. Let's go to Sean in California now. He wants to talk about UK migrants and the Fuentes-Jones debate. I wouldn't even call it a debate, would you, Sean?
Not at all, Harrison. The way I look at this thing is that it's something that British people, they may be past the point of recognizing this, but it's something American people also need to realize. It's we the people, not we who's going to be our leader next. It's you and your neighbor getting together, not let's pick somebody to be our flag carrier. Everybody is a leader now. Everybody is accountable and responsible. We the people is where this source of the American government has its roots and its engine and its strength. The conversation you and Patty from Boston had a little bit ago, that's what we need to have. An 80-20 issue like the genocide, like Epstein Island, all that. The American people need to go to their neighbor and say, hey, you know, they're trying to put boys on my daughter's soccer team or whatever the issue is. You guys have got to quit being bashful. Wear your InfoWars gear proudly like I do. Go out, put up some stickers or, you know, meet some people, press some flesh. You see someone with an InfoWars Trump or an American flag shirt, give them a compliment. Become sociable. We're supposed to be a society. All of this isolated, staring into your phones, that's what's going to be our downfall. Harrison, what do you think? Am I off or am I kind of on point here?
No, you're dead on. You're exactly right. I think, again, you know, it's a great opportunity now for people who are questioning, who are going, what is it? You know, people who haven't paid attention to the Epstein stuff are probably paying attention now. They probably have questions. You can probably answer them, right? A lot of people are going, man, things aren't what we thought. Things are not what they seem. I mean, we're in a period of awakening now that I guess is just sort of a continuation of COVID. But, you know, obviously COVID was a major opportunity for people to have their eyes open to the reality of the situation that we're in. It was also an opportunity for people to be folded further into the matrix and, you know, further, you know, more securely chained into the cave. That was a choice you had to make. Well, similar things happening here with all this confusion about Epstein and the manipulation of the intelligence agencies. I mean, now is an opportunity to go out and talk to people and go, you know, this isn't about Trump. Trump's not the bad guy here. You know, what you're dealing with is a, you know, well-established, long-held control of the American government by a deep state, by a secretive, you know, cabal and organization of individuals who aren't elected but persist regardless of who is technically in power at the time. They're actually running the operation. They're actually setting the policy, and it's never for the benefit of the American people. Right now is a great opportunity, I think, for awakening people, for getting involved, for, you know, getting outsiders elected. We cannot rely on Trump. We cannot rely on a leader. We have to be the leaders. I think you're dead on, Sean. I think I have time for one more call. Thank you so much for the call, as always, Sean. Oregon Bob in Oregon. We got about a minute left in the show. The floor is yours.
Oh, Harrison, a minute. Boy, we can't do it, buddy. I'll just touch on one topic. The atrocities that are going on are horrible, but let's talk about prosecution. This is a circus. And we're eating popcorn and we're waiting for some justice. Well, we've been waiting for justice for a long time. I'm just going to come out and say it. These guys are treasonous. They need to be strung up. It needs to be televised. We need to put teeth in the law. Promises don't, they don't cut it anymore. They just don't. If we don't have law, we don't have a constitution, we can't call it treason. What it is, these guys are guilty. It's a dog and pony show at this point. I think that the ultimate thing is to put teeth in the law, consequences. If you cross the line, you get strung up. Bottom line, that's it.
100%, Bob. And again, this is really, it's not an option for Trump anymore. It's not an option. You see his numbers cratering, you know, at least amongst the young people in particular. He's off the mark. He's losing support. If he doesn't punish these people, they're just going to do it again, and they're just going to be back. It's not an option. He's got to punish them. He's got to, and I've said it for a while. Every time he's in public now, he should say, nobody's above the law. He should spit that right back in their faces. Nobody is above the law. That means Obama, Hillary, Clapper, Comey, all of them. They're going down.
I'm only as strong as you are backing me. You figured it out yet? This is not like a regular show. The bad guys don't like it for a reason, because we have the information and we have the spirit of victory. So go now to theellisjonesstore.com. The new sale is one of the biggest in the history, maybe the biggest. Store-wide, buy one, get one free super sale. All the t-shirts, all the ball caps, the widest selection, all of the award-winning supplements, the Shilajit, the Methylene Blue, the Ultimate Life Force Blood Cardiovascular Cleaner, the best out there, Atomic Defense, Total Booster Immune System, the Irish Sea Moss, just over the top, everything, all of it, already discounted, buy one, get one free, but here's the catch. You have to be a subscriber, which is $30 a month, and you instantly get $40 to spend in the store. So if you're going to buy something, you instantly make your money back, and then some, simply by becoming a subscriber in the profile. Cancel one click anytime. You need to try our Ultra Methylene Blue, but talk to your physician first. And if you're on SSRIs and things, you can't take it. So check with your physician, or you can look at what you're taking as well and just check those interactions with it, because it's very powerful. It's very strong. Get the capsules or get the pure liquid. Same thing with the capsule. It's the very best medical grade. Get the Irish Sea Moss. Get the Shilajit, the pills, the gummies. It's all there. And then there's the best probiotic, the best prebiotic, the best gut cleanse formula, the very best turmeric, ultimate turmeric. It's just amazing. 95% cumanoid. Great fat, natural fat burning formula.
It's all there at thealexjonesstore.com, and the widest selection of t-shirts, ball caps, and more. Like it's I said I want the widest selection. It's kind of insane. There's like 500 plus designs now. It's redonkulous. So get it all right now and fund the Second American Revolution worldwide at thealexjonesstore.com. We'll be right back.